I was watching that special about the guy that died, the young guy with black hair, who was always bitching about everything. Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
And he ended up just talking about whatever he was thinking about. And I don't know if that's comedy, really. But a lot of guys eventually end up doing that because they have a platform.
That's how it works.
I don't have that platform. I still got to say funny shit.
All right, Ted Moss is joining me today. How you doing, Ted?
Real good. Thank you.
Can you mute your phone? Can we have
Sorry about that.
Listen, I'm asking you for professionalism.
There you go.
As we do the show on battery power today, which is unbelievable. But I'll explain that later. Why we're doing it the way we are, and why our guests? Because I'm expecting Corey Hall. So if you listen to the show and you never hear Corey Hall, just know that as we started this show, that Corey Hall is intending to be here. And that is going to be Corey Hall's little table.
Yes, not
it's
mine.
Very important. It's not yours.
I know.
So you can decide now. Do you want your own little table?
I'm going to set my stuff on Corey's table.
I'll give you.
Until he gets here.
And then there's going to be a fist fight.
No. I'm going to look very polite. And when he walks in, I'm going to be moving stuff for him.
Are you sure you want to do that?
No. It's good first impression. I'm moving my shit out of the way.
And if you do that, you're starting a fight.
No.
You don't know. Okay. So the setup here is Ted doesn't know Corey.
That's right.
Corey doesn't know Ted. I tell Corey that Ted's funny, and I like Ted, and that's why Ted's on the show. And he's like, okay. But you're also on the show.
He's like, okay. Because
there's a really good chance that Corey won't show up, which is why you're here.
Which would be funny. Yeah.
It's not funny to me when I fucking set this shit up every week. And the people that know this show and they know the history know that, yeah, that's been a thing for 13 years, 12 years.
That Corey doesn't show up.
Corey doesn't show up, and then Corey's not on the show for 6 months, and then people wonder what happened to Corey, and I'm like, well, the fucking guy doesn't show up. So I invite him. He doesn't show up, and then eventually he wants to be back, so he asks to be on, and then I let him on, and then he's good about showing up, and then he doesn't show up.
Well, what does it take to be a regular on this show? I mean,
fucking showing up. Just fucking, you know how,
the beer.
I mean, Woody Allen said 99% of success is just showing up. And Corey has failed at that. Corey gets the 1%, which is be good when you get there. And Corey's great when he gets here. But even today, where the fuck is he?
He's not here.
Now, granted, he could be mad at you because we said two.
At me.
Well,
he said
two, and I said two, and I said Ted's coming at two, and then Ted says I'm coming at one.
Yeah.
So I say, okay, we'll go at one. He says, I'll get here 1:30. Now it's
1:21. It's a compromise.
He's not here. And I got to get into the other thing. Oh, my God. This show is it. But listen, you come a long way.
Yes, I have.
To get here.
Yes, I have.
From wherever the hell you live. Which
right.
We were trying to determine before the show where the fuck that is.
It's some swamp. Planned up by Fenton, Michigan.
Fenton, Michigan.
Fenton, yes.
Which, now, it's funny that it seems like this is a thing in that part of the... I want to call it Metro Detroit, which you can almost call it that now, but it wouldn't have been. But it's far enough away.
It's almost Metro Flint.
Metro Flint. But that part, for those of you that don't know Michigan or don't know the area, Fenton is a place where there are well-to-do people who go up there and build big houses and have lots of land and have a great life and everything.
I have not met those people.
And then there's people with meth labs. And that's who lives there. And there's no in between. There is no middle class
that is,
up there.
That's totally not true. Now, it's a lake community, Joel. There's 20 lakes within 5 miles.
Yeah, and
people
that's
living
the rich
on the lakes
people, okay.
With their meth labs,
okay.
I guess.
But rich people get boats. They go fishing.
Yes.
Some people have to sell them bait. And those are the other people that live in Fenton. What have I gotten wrong about this statement?
No, you're absolutely right.
I am completely right.
Yes.
Thank you.
The meth bait.
The more
people.
You can say that throughout the show, makes
the better.
Me feel good. That
yeah.
You're completely right.
Yeah.
as we listen to a guy working
a
about
jackhammer.
10 feet away, a jackhammer. So is that, have I nailed Fenton at some level?
Well, no.
No!
I can't.
You just said I was completely right.
Well, that's only for your benefit. I can't be on the internet
saying. Well, tell us what Fenton is and what your part of Fenton is.
It's a lake community. It's not unusual to go to Home Depot and see people in their bathing suits. It's
okay.
That kind of community.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, it's a nice little community, nice little restaurants, nice schools. It is not really a mixed community. Mm-hmm. It's primarily a white community.
Do you live on a lake? Is that one of those guys?
No, I do not live on
a lake. If you wanted to go to the lake, how far and by what methodology would you get to the lake?
I could drive my car any direction less than 2 miles and be on
a lake.
All right,
well, that's good.
Yeah, if I wanted to be on a lake, that'd be great. Right. And at one time, I had boats on multiple lakes out there. And I was in a sailing club and raced sailboats and did all the lake stuff ever wanted to do.
And now you're on Joel Radio on battery power.
I'm really moving up in the world.
You've done well.
In Ferndale.
In Ferndale, which is a great place.
It is. I would like to live in Ferndale. I'd like to live on Woodward and 9 Mile, right on that corner.
That's kind of where I live. I'm close enough to that.
Yeah, you are.
I have not made it quite there, but this is a good place to be.
Sell everything
I
own.
If you wanted to live in a very nice home that is nicer than this house, believe it or not, there's houses nicer than this one.
In Ferndale.
Or Pleasant Ridge, which is sort of the town between Royal Oak and Ferndale, and those are mansions. Those are old mansions, and they're real nice.
I'm over the mansion part
expensive.
Of my life. I don't need that anymore.
Are you downsizing?
I did. I actually sold my big house a couple years ago, about 5 years ago. I had a good-sized house, and I've downsized, but I need to downsize further.
Yeah?
I do. I have too much house.
I got a room for rent. How's that sound? Does that sound
good?
Yeah,
really. Really.
You'll be a frequent guest on the show then. Yeah. You'll assure yourself of that.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
So
I'm a regular.
In.
Yes.
Well, you haven't met the girl that rents from me.
No, but I heard
her
voice.
Say yes.
Her voice sounded pretty nice.
When did you hear her voice?
Well, earlier when I was arriving. I pay attention,
Joel. I don't think that's even her. I don't even...
Maybe it's her girlfriend.
I heard my voice. I don't think she's here.
Very high.
Maybe another girl. Maybe there's another
feminine.
Girl up there. Hey, Ted, go upstairs and see if there's a girl up there. Will you do that?
I'll be
for
right
me?
Back after these messages.
But I like having Ted here. Ted, you were here last. We were talking about my comedy class.
Yes, we were. Yeah.
And that show I always put up when I have a class.
I know.
To sort of promote what's in the class
I
and
know.
Some of my students that have done well.
Yes.
Like Steve Hansen and some that haven't done well like you.
Right.
No, I'm kidding.
Right,
but
that's true. Steve was here and he was very funny. Yeah. I remember
But it's good. I'm glad you did that. And that was a good thing that I did. I did sort of an infomercial for the class that was back in, I think, November, December.
Yeah.
So you can go check out that class with Ted, or that show with Ted, where I talk about my class. I have a new group that I just started with.
Really? How many students do you have this time?
Because it's summer, we're light. So I think I have seven or eight.
You got any rising stars in your class?
Well,
here's
what I get. It's hard to say after a week, but here's what I've gotten. And I think you might have been the first, but I have repeat customers now.
Oh.
I have people in the class now.
That's in vogue now. I started that trend. You're welcome.
I believe I have two of them that have done it, that are doing it for the third time.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I could stand a third time.
No.
No offense, but a third time, that's a bit much. You lecture for 3 hours. I'm not sure I want to hear the same lecture, three-hour lecture for 9 hours.
The lectures are laid out the same. Are they exactly the same in how they come out? Because people ask questions and that, maybe not.
You're still listening to the same person, Joel.
No, I understand.
I'm not sure.
Believe me, I've done 400. Of these. No. I'm not sure anyone's listening anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not that different.
Yes. I would like to come and watch, though. I'd like to see the new kids perform or new people coming up perform and see what they're doing.
I like that people, I like to invite anyone that's ever done the class to feel free to sit in. If you want to take the whole thing and sort of monopolize the stage time, then you got to pay.
No.
But if you just want to come and watch and give your 2 cents, I'm all for that.
Yeah, you know? I don't want to hear the lectures, and I don't want stage time.
Yeah.
I'd like to watch people perform, because if they're really good, I find it inspirational. Well, if they're really bad, it makes me feel really good about what I'm doing.
I've got
a
guy.
Either way, it's a win.
Here's one of my three-timers that I've got now.
Is it somebody I know?
Maybe. That's why I'm asking. I don't know if you did it within my class. By the way, in the two
it's,
years...
It's not Anthony.
No, in the two and some years that I've done this class, everything now blends together.
Yeah.
I'm making the assumption that you know everyone that's ever done my class and you don't have the foggiest.
Probably not. Probably not. Yeah.
But... I got a guy named Seiko Yamagita.
Oh, yeah, Seiko.
And you know Seiko.
Oh, yeah.
And that guy's in for the third time.
Really?
And Seiko...
Well, that was the highlight of his career so far, I think. And I think
Seiko,
it's going to be good. He's very unusual.
Makes me laugh more than almost anybody.
I don't know if that's good.
Well, I don't know
if
it's just... Well, my challenge is, how do I take what I find funny about Seiko...
Yeah.
Make sure that he knows... that's what I think is funny about him, and then have the entire audience eat up what he does.
Right, right. Well, you remember I was in class with him because I was the one that was going, hero.
And
he
said, Ted, that's very racist.
That's too
Please
much,
don't
Ted.
Don't do that. But Seiko, if you have
and
a
I was
few...
I was talking to him in Japanese, and you told me to cool that,
well,
too. I was like,
you do that.
Arigato, arimasu.
Well, this is what like... Ted does something that I find extremely racist. And I go, Ted, no. Knock that off. And then I go, Seiko, though, if you had a few more sushi jokes, that would really kill.
Which wouldn't be racist, eh?
Yeah, well, there's a
depends
degree.
On who it comes from.
There's a degree there.
Right.
And so Seiko's a guy, and believe me, Seiko's coming right on this show, if I think people will make sense of that. I think I need somebody there to translate, and maybe you'd be good at that.
I would be. I've been to Japan. I can do this.
But Seiko's a guy that I like a lot, but it's a challenge. You know, here's what I just had. Here's who I just graduated from the most recent class. But part of my thing as a teacher, and I think this is why I can claim success with guys like Seiko and these acts I'm talking about, is they do these shows. And I know, did you go to New Way Bar with Seiko one time?
You know what?
And me? And
yeah,
and
I went one time. I tried not to go to New Way, but I felt obligated, okay. And I went to New Way, and I did that one time.
I took Seiko to New Way. And the crowd, maybe you were on this night or maybe you were on a different night. Crowd was mostly black women.
Oh.
Were you at that one? Maybe
no,
you
I was
one.
Not.
Seiko.
No, I was
so
not.
So I have a crowd that's mostly black women. They're waiting to see one of their black woman friends perform.
Yes.
But Seiko goes up, does his thing, and I swear to God, I've never seen a guy kill in that New Way Bar more than Seiko.
Really?
With mostly black women.
Really?
They love this fucking guy.
Really?
They thought he was the greatest thing they've ever seen.
Were they laughing at him or laughing with him?
You know what? It might have been a little bit of both, but that's how those acts kind of have to work.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
My opinion.
Yeah.
They have to work that way.
Yeah.
So Seiko goes up, and Seiko is destroying, doing all this stuff. And I've seen Seiko at other shows where he destroys, and then I've seen Seiko, like, people not get it. But
he was,
you know,
taking off his T-shirts and
he
doing
does
that.
He does those jokes. He opens the show by thinking he's at the karaoke bar,
right,
which
right,
works sometimes
right.
and sometimes
yeah.
doesn't work.
Yeah, and that worked.
And that's something I kind of came up with for him.
Yeah,
and but
all
he's
right.
really embraced it, but you know, he came back and said, "Look, I've struggled at shows, and I don't know why." And he said he played to a crowd of largely Middle Eastern women, and they didn't get him.
Really?
And he was very down on himself and said he didn't do shows for a couple months. And I said, look, the deal with a comedy show, and I'm going to give you a little comedy lesson here, and then we're going to move on. And not just I'm talking to you, Kip, a comedy lesson.
Yeah,
no.
I get. I saw some of his posts after he did that show.
Yeah, he was very responded.
Yeah, on Facebook,
yeah.
He was like, yeah, I hate doing this. And he was just very sad about the whole thing.
And believe me, it is my goal to have Seiko sitting here in this studio soon enough.
Because this is the top of the pile.
Well,
you can sit in Joel's studios.
He will be funny here.
Yes.
I will make him funny. In conversation, Seiko will be hilarious. But I said to him, I said, there are three elements of a comedy show. I think, for me, three elements. One of them is having a really funny comedian. And Seiko, to me, when he's on, is a very funny comedian. It qualifies.
Okay.
And I think the other thing that you need, and I think you qualify, and certainly I qualify. The other thing you need is you need a good venue. So you need lights, you need sound, you need the show set up well, you need an audience that's paying attention. You
right.
need a, well, the audio, okay. So you need the venue to do its part.
Right.
You can hear the guy. You can see the guy.
Yeah.
There's not a TV on playing Monday Night Football 6 feet away.
Yes, and a good host introduce you and getting things rolling and all that.
And the other
thing
that you need is you need an audience that is receptive to the show. Now, part of that, the venue helps because, hey, you know, did this audience pay money to watch the show? Are they just there to see their friend? Did they know it was comedy night when they walked in? And when you don't have that, you can't. So without one of those three things,
right,
it doesn't work.
You know, it's funny. It's funny because I've done some shows up in the Saginaw area recently.
Yeah.
And at the
I'm
same
sorry.
Venue. No. They have some good rooms. Mike Ball up there runs some really good rooms.
Okay.
And I've actually killed up there in a couple of rooms. And you go back to the exact same room, and it looks like the same crowd, and they're paying attention.
Yeah.
It's not so funny.
No,
nobody's so funny. It will be one of those dead nights, and you go, you know, I did my same set.
Right.
I'm not really sure what happened.
And it can be that it's just a small crowd.
Do you think that's because of the way the show starts out?
I mean,
or do
I
you think?
I think the host sets the tone, and that is a good thing that you want, and that's why one of the things I teach in class is emphasizing hosting.
Right.
Being a good host, even when you bomb.
Right.
And that's an important thing because a lot of times the host bombs because, you know, you've hosted Wednesday night at Comedy Castle.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard,
and I've hosted one of your graduation shows.
People like a good host.
Yeah, I think the problem that I had with hosting, though, is that my stuff really doesn't lend itself to hosting.
Yeah.
Because it's a little bit too racy, a little bit too wild to hear right up front.
Yeah.
And actually, I have new stuff.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit calmer.
Okay.
And might not be pushing the envelope so much. Because sometimes it's kind of hard to follow that. You bring somebody out that's kind of
right.
quiet. And
yeah.
All of a sudden you lose everything. And you don't want to feel like you're the host and you're coming back up to do more material in between. So it makes it kind of tough.
So Seiko, I think, you know, this Middle Eastern women, probably not real funny people. Not really a great comedy. Not really willing to listen.
But these are Middle Eastern women. Where at?
And
at
somewhere at, in Dearborn, which
yeah?
is where they where they're made.
And it, they're producing them down
that's
there.
Where they are. Well, that's
they're making
a,
more.
There's an old. Okay, I'm not saying the joke.
No.
There's an old joke that I've heard road comics talk about Gary, Indiana, and I'm going to let you do the math. But let's move on.
All right, you get the
yeah. joke, right?
Okay. No, I don't know anything about that.
Benton Harbor, Michigan, same joke.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the
all
point.
Right.
And I said to him, I said, well, look, they're probably not, and they're probably, and listen, that's not any offense to Arab people or whatever, but probably tinges of racism, where they're not around Japanese people. They don't know what's funny about Japanese people. And so to see this Japanese guy doing jokes about how he's Japanese and sushi and things that people that grow up in America find funny, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, the other thing is he's making fun of his own culture.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't like to make fun of their culture.
Exactly, yes.
And so maybe it doesn't translate.
Yeah.
And they're like, you shouldn't be criticizing yourself and you're doing this and it's not funny. Because it wouldn't be funny. So I understand that. So the bottom line is don't have Arab audiences.
Well,
is that the bottom line?
It's hard for him to work to that audience.
Yeah.
And it's hard for some people to work to certain audiences, which is why another thing I do in class, maybe you don't work corporate shows. Maybe because of Iraq, you don't work this. You don't work this. You don't play for kids.
Right.
You don't play for all women. You don't play for college kids. Whoever.
Right, right,
I'm not
right,
saying
right.
you, but whoever it
no,
is
no,
that's
I,
a student
I totally get that. I was asked to participate in a show down in Wyandotte, and it was at like the Marinery or something, and I didn't know what the show was. Billy Reno called me last minute. You got to come down and do this. We had somebody who can't make it.
Uh-huh.
Nice venue, nice group of people, and I went up and did my normal old man sex jokes. Turned out that it was a fundraiser for the Cub Scouts.
Oh.
And the Cub Scouts moms were all looking at each other. I don't think we're supposed to laugh at this. So, yeah, it was probably not my crowd.
Some good-looking Cub Scout
moms. Yeah, and I went back.
Is that true?
You know,
is that true?
No. I'm not saying that.
No,
I went back to the table, and the guy that was headlining was out of Chicago. Hilarious guy. And I went back, and I said to him, yeah, I'm thinking maybe that was a little over the edge for these people. He said, you think? I said, yeah, apparently.
But do they tell you, do they go, hey, language restrictions here?
No, they didn't. They don't.
Keep
they
a
don't,
clean
No,
Ted.
The owner and the manager was not there. But I tell you what, the guy that was working the door that managed the place, he thought I was hilarious. But I think he was like the only one. So.
Well, you'll have that too.
Yeah.
But again, you know, Seiko is so new to it and has done so well with, you know, sort of the shows that I've put him on and that it was a kick in the nuts to him in a way that it shouldn't be.
Yeah, but he's got a specific type of comedy. He has an unusual style, and it's not going to fly everywhere, I think.
Yeah, but I got to get Seiko in here. I love that guy. That guy's funny. He's a gold mine.
I'd come just to watch that. I mean, I don't even have to talk. I'd come to watch him talk.
And I need a guy, and maybe you'll be the guy who can sort of translate for Seiko. And there's another guy. It's funny when I say translate for Seiko because there's another guy. You know Ron Rigby?
I was in his class.
Ron is a guy that's
good
another guy.
Funny guy.
Ron's funny, too. Yeah, Ron's got to come in here.
Yeah.
But Ron's another guy where I can say something, and Ron will turn to Seiko and go, what Joel's meaning is this.
Exactly.
And it's
exactly.
Like, thanks, Ron.
Yeah.
You're
I was
great.
In that same class with Ron and Seiko.
Oh, really?
And
you?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Shit. It was a dream team.
It was.
The hell?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me tell you about the last class.
All right.
And I first of all, I want to say, because people may go, oh, man, I'm not going to take Joel's class. He's going to dump on me podcast. I love these guys.
Yeah.
I thought these guys.
Yeah.
And my goal is that when you bring me whoever you are, that I will make you better. That is, I don't want to say that's the money back guarantee because there ain't no money back guarantee. And part of that is.
No, I think that's true, though.
You ain't getting your money back from Old Man Ridley anyway.
Yeah,
even if I've wanted to give it to you, you're not getting that.
Right.
But here's the thing. If you walk away, if you come into my class and you do it and you're funnier when you leave, I did my job.
Right.
That's the idea. That's the best I can do. So here's the deal. So here's what I had last time. This is what I had. First day. have a lady, Diana Williams, and I've seen her before. And this lady does
older lady.
She's in her 50s, let's say. I don't know.
Younger than me, but older than most.
I might be being generous. 50s. Does a ventriloquism act.
Oh.
What the hell do you do with that?
Oh.
And I've never done ventriloquism. How do you... And I've seen her perform. She hasn't done well.
Yeah.
So right away I go, oh, the odds are stacked against her. So that there's that. Then I get a lady. I get a lady, Beverly Landau.
Yeah.
Who I've seen do the beginner comedy class.
Okay.
And she is 71 years old.
Oh.
She does a lot of jokes about being, I believe, a cancer survivor, a widow, and a former school teacher.
Oh, well, that's
so
not
I
bad.
See that, and
that's
I go, and I've seen her kill, and I go, okay, this will be easy. This lady's funny. I'm feeling good. Because, you know, the day one, you start your class, and you start rubbing your hands together.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw this guy. I can't wait to work with this guy.
Right.
I'm going to get this guy working at the club. I'm real excited.
That's
the goal. And then I see that she, when I'm talking to her, she goes, oh, no, I'm going to do this. I want to do a team.
She's changing it.
She goes, I'm going to be a comedy team with this guy, Dan.
Oh.
And I've seen Dan, and I thought Dan was funny.
Okay.
So now Dan is saying, I'm not doing my act. I'm going to be in this comedy team with this old lady.
Have they been working on it?
No, not at all. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
You're going to invent it for
so now
you're
going
to put it together.
So now, with my years and years, my 18 years in stand-up comedy, I now have to teach... a comedy team, which is something I've never done.
Yeah.
Something I've never written for.
Yeah.
And who really don't work in a stand-up comedy environment, as far as I can tell. You don't see comedy teams.
No.
And you see ventriloquists, and they bomb.
Yes.
So I'm like, how? And I've seen her bomb.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what the hell am I teaching here? What do I do? So that was my challenge with this last group. But I'll tell you, they graduated, and they both did well.
Were they still a team at the end of graduation? They performed as
a
team.
Did a
Will they do ever do it again?
They did
or was
a
it a
mother,
one and done?
They did a mother-son act.
Oh.
Where
and?
Danny, the younger guy, was the son. And mom,
you know,
and it worked. It worked on show night. If you went to that show,
yeah,
you saw it,
I actually
good.
Tried to put one of those together.
Yeah,
I had two different guys. One was with Chris Lazar.
Okay,
and another one
Chris.
was somebody else that I was going to do a kind of a dad son kind of thing.
So my goal with them was let this ventriloquist lady get solid laughs for 6 minutes. She did.
Yeah.
Let the mother son act at least make sense and have a narrative you could follow.
Yeah.
I cut it from like 13 minutes to 9 minutes, and that worked. And I said, my work is done here. I still got it. Please wipe the sweat off my brow. Everyone had a great time, so I was very happy about that.
Oh, good.
That.
Congratulations. So
all right, let's bring in Corey Hall. What's happening?
What is happening with
the mics?
Well,
we're going to explain. I know. Corey's looking at first of all, Corey and Ted don't know each other.
Yeah,
and
hi, Corey.
Ted, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Ted and Corey, you guys are cut from the same cloth. You're both funny. You're both loud. You're both full of
loud?
Shit. You're going to love each other. Trust me, it's going to be
well,
a relationship.
You know, okay.
Okay, I know you don't care.
Now, what is
Let me explain. I haven't even explained to the audience.
You got like the vocal recorder going on
you,
there? I know this is behind the scenes. I should probably
not break the
illusion.
I haven't talked about it.
Mics are all funky.
But did you see a line of trucks in front of the venue?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
They are threatening to cut the power to the studio
and
the house in the next 30 minutes. Ted has to be somewhere. And so basically what I'm doing is I'm doing the show off battery power into the field recorder, into dynamic mics and not the condenser mics. I am listening and monitoring, and it sounds good to me.
All right.
As long as this battery power has power.
You know, I've been hoping for someone to cut the power to this show for years.
Yeah.
So actually, I know you may even want to open that door if you think it's getting too warm. I think it's fine for now. I've got a fan going. They haven't cut the power, but if we started doing the show
there's a flotilla of DTE.
What they're doing is I think they're replacing the poles.
I think so too. I talked to your neighbors on the way.
And eventually we'll start hearing saws. And
we've heard some jackhammers.
Jackhammers already,
But we've been saving what's on the agenda for you to actually get here.
All right.
Because God forbid if I start talking about Eliza Schlesinger and Corey's not here.
Oh.
I don't think that
we're
going to have...
You want to get into Eliza?
Well, we're going to, and here's why.
Did you finish on your class anecdote?
The class is done. Well, Ted was in my class.
Okay. Yes, I've been in his class.
I am a reformed comedy class teacher. I decided that you cannot teach comedy... And I certainly couldn't because I can't fucking stand people that want to do comedy. After nearly 20 years of doing this, the last thing I need to see is another jerk off that thinks he's funny.
Well,
and that's the last thing I need. Right. I got
well,
an
it's
ass
good to meet you, Corey.
I got an ass. No, you're too old. Give it up.
I just started.
That's why he's like, yeah, you come in, I work with you on your act. Corey looks at you and says, you're too old.
You're too old. He's too old.
See,
he can't
too old. You can't do it.
Funny.
If you could just leave your money at the door, right.
But see,
be great.
I felt that there were people I could work with. Yeah. But the general class, when you open it up and people come in, some people don't know what they're doing and have no idea that this is not for them. And it was too painful for me to get through the process of going, this is not for you.
But you're making money. Yeah, the point is to make money. I think that's why they do
it.
But
see,
I think doing it for money.
I never thought that was...
That wasn't your motivation.
Personally, I feel like that's secondary to the art of the comedy. I don't care really.
I mean, look,
I think if you're looking... Okay, as a comedian, as an active working comedian, I feel like if you're taking money to tell people they're funny, you're hurting the business.
No.
I actually think Joel tells people they are not funny.
I explained, Corey, don't say that.
You're not funny.
First of all, all of Corey's emotions I've had, and I felt those things. But my attitude is, again, like I said, the goal is you come in, you're something, I make you better. If you're good, maybe I can make you great. If you're just okay, maybe I can make
you
good.
If you
completely suck, I can at least hope that you can get 6 minutes of laughs on the graduation show. And there's times that I've failed at that, but at least that's my goal.
Your class at least is billed as the 102.
It is, yes.
So that you have to have taken the other class.
Right.
So that maybe will filter out.
Believe me, getting people who've never done comedy do comedy is a level of frustration.
Which is what I was doing.
And that's what Bill Bouchard does. Yeah. God bless Bill. We love Bill. And when I fill in for Bill, I feel that same frustration. But I also would feel a frustration when I did the Comedy 101 is I would sit down and I go, hey, when you're working in a club, you know, you want to stand here and you got to do this and make sure to shake hands.
Too much.
Can't see it looks good. And people are like, I just want to fucking tell some jokes to my aunt and uncle so they think I'm funny.
Right.
And the next time I go to a birthday party, I'm never going to do this again.
I used to do a drill where they would introduce, like, just come up and introduce the next guy.
Okay.
And just kind of one after another.
Right.
And that was always a struggle.
Yeah.
To, like,
no,
get people to think
people,
like an MC.
People
and,
don't care at that level. And that's what I've learned.
Well,
I've learned to say I'm good with the advanced students because I'm the guy that works at the club and runs the open mic and can help you get booked.
Well, it's
kind
of a public speaking class at the basic level.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Bill says.
Right.
And if you happen to be funny, he'll make you a little bit funnier. But I think the only person that knows if the class is worthwhile isn't the teachers. It's the student.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that would be only me in this room.
Well, yeah. There was a lady that came in, and she was like in her early 60s, maybe late 50s. And she was wearing a visor, like a poker visor, like a green poker visor.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Early, might have said like Sarasota, Florida
was it like,
or something.
To be funny? It was a funny outfit?
I think that she thought, and she had her dog with her.
Oh.
This was like her emotional support animal.
Oh.
Or maybe it was like her, she wasn't blind, but maybe she had trouble seeing, you know?
Yeah.
So it was
she had
like,
a whole image
she,
had,
she was
on.
Kind of legally blind.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, the degree of difficulty for this for people whose limbs and arms work and are relatively attractive is hard enough. No, we've seen some people that are disabled that have done well.
I've personally taught guys who are on the spectrum. I think I think we know.
Yeah.
I worked with Josh Blue. He's killer, but like.
No, but I mean,
it's already
just
hard
from the teaching thing. I've taught guys.
It's
who
already
are,
hard enough. There's certain people I just look and go, this is hard enough for a guy who's 24, like a 24-year-old white guy who has no issues of health or anything, is already going to struggle to do comedy.
Right.
You're working behind the eight ball. And so that was
right.
Did you ever see Louis?
Louis?
From my class?
I don't think so.
Okay, Louis did it. I think Louis may have even done it twice.
I don't
think
it was in my class.
Once. But Louis is way out there.
Yeah.
On the spectrum.
Well,
like, way out.
Anthony Slanda.
Yeah, but Anthony.
Kind of thing.
Way more than Anthony. Yeah.
Does a kind of a character.
Anthony's quirky in a way that this kid Louis was just way out there.
Yeah.
To where, you know, but he loved listening to the lecture. He loved being in the class.
Right.
Didn't say much in the class and then went on stage, did a completely different set every week I put him up.
Oh.
Did a completely different set at the thing. And then he was just like doing kind of whatever.
Well, that's like the guy with the long red beard. He'd do a different set every time.
Yeah,
he never knew what he was going to say.
So this Louis guy, he never knew
what he was going to say.
So Louis said, I wanted to just be, his name was going to be Louis. And I said, all right. So I said, let me get the song.
Yeah.
And we put the song on, and the kid comes out, and he gets everybody clapping along. People are going wild. Then he went up there, said a bunch of shit that I had never heard him say before. Then he said something about, like, it's time for, in the middle of a set, he goes, it's time for a commercial break. And then he did some, like, commercial parody that I'd never heard, and people were roaring, and it was hilarious.
Oh, really?
And he comes backstage, and his whole set was, like, this amazing, like, this guy went up there, and no one knew. Everyone looked at this kid like he wanted to put a fucking dime and get a Tootsie Roll from him.
Yeah.
And this kid destroyed with this weird act that I had even never heard before. And, you know, the Louie
Louie
thing.
This was the graduation show.
So the Louie Louie thing, at least I made that happen, and I was proud of that. I go, hey, man, if you get him liking you,
you're
right away.
You were proud of that?
I was right. Well, listen, I was proud that the kid didn't bomb.
He added something.
So then he goes off, and I go, what about that, like, commercial thing, Louie? Like, I've never heard you do that. Where'd you get it from? He goes, oh, I heard George do it.
What?
And I go, George? Who's George? And he goes, George Carlin.
No.
So he took, like, some George Carlin comedy record bit from the 70s.
Threw it into
the middle of the set. One knew it was George Carlin. He got away with it. And I was like, you know what? You are a fucking superstar, man. You killed. I'm so proud of this kid.
A guy came in one time and did his whole thing as Bernie Mac.
He did a Bernie Mac
He was basically doing a Bernie Mac act.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't really.
Well, see, those are the things you can teach, that there's some rules about comedy.
Yeah.
Some things you are not supposed to do.
You can't do an impression. It wasn't even an impression. It was like he was just doing his whole act as Bernie Mac.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm not funny. Bernie Mac is. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's why you're not Bernie Mac.
Yeah.
So do your own thing. Anyway. Right.
Well, let's talk.
Speaking of unfunny people.
Well, Eliza Schlesinger, who we're going to talk about her because comics had their knives out this week. And believe me, they got their knives out for somebody next week. And at some point, the knives will be out for me. But this week, it was Eliza Schlesinger. Now, this is
you've had fists out on
Eliza, we probably would have talked about this without any personal knowledge of the thing, even if I didn't know Eliza and hadn't worked with Eliza. I know you saw Eliza when she was
at your club,
so we'll talk about that in a second.
At Mark's.
And Eliza, so basically here's what Eliza Schlesinger did. Now, Eliza Schlesinger's got a show on Freeform TV, which is, what is that, Corey? We talked about this on the phone.
It used to be, I think, ABC Family.
ABC Family. So that's Freeform. She's been on a bunch of shows. She has Netflix specials.
By the way, is she a family act?
No, but I guess if you want Freeform to not be for families and you want to put her on late night, that's fine. Okay. So Eliza, now here's what I'm going to say about Eliza. Here's what I'm going to intro. I've seen Eliza's show. I saw it live. I've never watched her Netflix special. I've seen her on some television doing short things. I watched her show, I guess, 5 times in a week. She puts on a really good show.
Really good.
She's a good writer. She's a very good performer. She's a beautiful woman, I don't think that's germane to whether she's funny or not, but that will come up at some point in this conversation. So let's just put that out there. She is an attractive woman. She has a huge female following, and I know that from working the club and seeing who showed up to see her. She had a lot of women and guys like Ted as well, old pervs. But Eliza got in trouble this week for an interview she did with Deadline, and I'm going to read you a couple of quotes here. Basically, I think the one that really got her was about women in comedy. And Eliza is held out there as, here's a successful woman in comedy. But she, being held out as that, really insulted essentially every other woman in comedy, because she said this. Where's the quote again? I wish I had these printed out, but no computer, no power. Okay. I can walk into the Improv, close my eyes, and I can't tell one girl's act apart from another. That's not saying that the 30-something white guys don't all sound the same sometimes, but I'm banging my head against the wall because women want to be treated as equals and we want feminism to be a thing, but that's really difficult when every woman makes the same point about her vagina over and over. I think I'm the only woman out there that has a joke about World War II in my set. All right, let's start with that.
Well, hold on. What was the question that she was answering? Do you have that?
The question is, when you're a woman, basically, when you're a woman in comedy, the question, her thoughts on the way women in comedy are represented or represent themselves in comedy.
Right.
Her point is women don't represent themselves well. They're not original enough. They're all doing the same thing.
Many, many women.
Here's my thing. And this is the beginning of my criticism of what she actually said. And again, I like Eliza's act. But here's the thing. I've seen people, and women, men aside, do World War II jokes. and, you know, Nazi jokes, jokes about, and I don't even know what her World War II joke is. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube.
I haven't okay. heard it, but I'm not sure.
But
that's
I've heard
the point.
People do jokes about, you know, who's the girl that hid from the Nazis? Anne Frank. I've heard Anne Frank jokes. I've heard Nazi jokes. I've heard concentration camp jokes. And normally I hear these from edgy comedians who think it's a taboo topic that they couldn't do. I rarely see people have any success with World War II material. So if you're asking me, should you have a vagina joke or a World War II joke, I say go 100% vagina.
Norm MacDonald's got a great – he's like, you know, Germany went to war with the world.
Yeah.
And it was close.
All right.
See, that's all great. Like,
right.
That's good.
You know, right.
That's good.
All right.
You know what I mean? But that's like not a...
The rules
a,
don't apply to a to man norm. That right. I believe is one of the best, funniest guys yeah. I've ever seen work out. But yeah, I would say, let's not write...
Her
I
point
say,
is, I guess her point is that, and okay, on a objective analysis level, most women don't... my wife, who has a law degree and is highly educated, yeah. went to liberal arts, a high-grade liberal arts college, I could ask her like five battles of World War II.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have a goddamn
okay.
clue.
But my
so
point,
I think on an objective okay. level, a lot of women don't. That's a thing men, you know, if I were like, what happened at right. Dunkirk?
But I don't
so,
think
so
I don't think that's really her
okay,
point.
Okay, but the point is this.
No, I think
the
your point is that women are focusing on, their, you know, it's all about getting drunk in the day and drinking. She's basically accusing everybody of being Chelsea Handler.
Okay.
Who now Chelsea's doing
but,
politics.
But here's the thing.
Well, I think she's... it's Amy Schumer.
World
it's Amy
War
Schumer.
II.
I think
is
that's
the,
who
is
she's taking
okay,
the jab
she's
at.
Let me finish
a lot
of, yeah. my point. Well, and all the girls that do Amy Schumer humor.
Well, the problem is there's a lot of girls that are doing Amy Schumer's act.
Yes.
And
or acts very similar, too.
She has a point in this,
let me
it's never going to go well because they're all going to get mad.
World War II jokes generally don't work. Pussies are always funny. That's why people do fucking pussy jokes, Eliza. Because they're fucking funny. That's why guys do dick jokes. Guys do shitty fucking dick jokes. Then there's guys like me that are fucking genius dick jokes that make people laugh. I write good dick jokes. Okay, Corey, fuck you. Here's the point. And that's a, believe me, if it was a video podcast, you'd be thinking the same thing. Here's the point.
Yeah.
Dick jokes are funny. Sex is funny. It's universally funny to people.
Well, not to Jerry Seinfeld.
But are women...
Why do you have to talk about a pussy?
Sure. Women are doing Amy Schumer and Chelsea Handler's act because they think that's what they want, and that's what they're influenced by. They get influenced by that. They get into comedy. Maybe they find their voice. You can't walk into an open mic and tell all these new guys, well, fuck, man. I mean, there were 6 months when everyone sounded like Dane Cook. There was six months that everyone sounded like Louis C.K. There's 6 months everyone's going to sound like whoever the next asshole
Bill
is.
Hicks.
Bill Hicks. So, you know, you're going to have that. But my thing is, for her, are you that – and I know the answer. I'm going to answer my own question in a second. But are you that dumb to throw everybody under the bus?
Yes.
I don't think that's – can I argue the
but
opposite
she's doing
side?
That.
I think you're absolutely wrong. I think you're taking it all out of context.
What?
They asked about in general –
yeah.
How women are representing themselves
right.
in comedy. And she's saying,
okay.
I'm kind of over it.
Okay. Is she right or wrong factually? She's probably not wrong factually. But here's what's wrong. You're an asshole for saying it. And I think that's what the blowback is.
I don't think so.
No?
She's not an asshole for saying it?
No,
you know what I posted when you posted about? I said ahead of the curve. I think she's saying I'm over it. That, you know, at one time, shock comedy was a thing. If you think about Carlin back in the day and talking about his seven words you can't say,
yeah.
you know, one of them was tits.
Yeah.
I mean, how benign is that now? And women in comedy, at one time, if they talked about, hey, I have a vagina and I like using it,
yeah.
that was shocking. And she's saying, I'm over it. And maybe the world is over. Maybe it's time for women to be more like Tina Fey.
Yeah,
have her be a little bit more diverse.
Eliza's act has had all of that stuff.
Yeah,
in
but
it,
the,
at one
the
time
point
or
is, you can use your femininity without saying it's all about screwing.
Okay,
it doesn't have to all be about. Isn't
point,
it funny that I like to screw?
The blowback to Eliza, and I'm going to talk about her personally in a second. Is
Eliza?
This,
I'm on your side.
She, comes
honey, when
off,
you come to town, you come and see me.
See you. She comes off as see you next Tuesday. All day long in this interview, and in her, I've had this level of success, and I'm punching down on comics who haven't had success. It comes off as tone deaf and really bitchy and catty in a way that it shouldn't be.
I read
and
the whole interview. It didn't come off that way to me. Did you see it live? Is there a recording of it? Did you see it live?
I've never met Eliza. I only have had secondhand accounts from From multiple sources.
Firsthand.
No, I'm just saying from multiple sources. I'm saying, well, secondhand to me.
Yeah.
I've never worked with her, but I have heard from more than one person that she's a little difficult, that she brings her dog.
She has a therapy dog.
She has her emotional support
dog. So she shouldn't say what she thinks about comedy because she has a therapy dog.
The interview came off poorly.
Right.
I think that's true. A lot of the same women that were accusing Amy Schumer of stealing jokes were also mad at Eliza.
Well,
so it seems like there's always a thing in comedy where people go, someone will give some preposterous douchey interview. Dane Cook used to give these interviews.
Yeah.
He was like, I walk above the water, and everybody's following and copying me.
Well,
and that shit always...
She comes off... Okay, look, I've complimented her act, and I'm not taking any of that back. But she... And this... Okay, here's my... Only because it's hot today. Only because it's hot and it's in the news, I will tell you about working with Eliza Schlesinger personally. For three days.
I met her for 3 minutes.
You
so
did.
I'm going to
count. And I know. And I was there when you met her.
You were.
Okay.
You were.
So here's the thing. She was very difficult to deal with on a personal level, on a backstage level, on a show bit. And listen, I worked with lots of celebrities. I've worked with them at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. I've worked with them at other venues where I perform comedy. I've worked with them at the Gathering of the Juggalos. What made her difficult? There's an attitude that some people have, and she certainly had it, is I don't want to be here. I'm better than this place. I do not respect you as the staff.
At Mark Ridley's.
I've seen that.
Take her down to the New Way
I've
Bar.
I've seen that. Oh, forget about that.
All right. Here's what generally tracks in my experience. I've seen that attitude from a lot of people. Some of those people were coked up or on some kind of drugs.
Yeah.
I feel like but the guys that are like, okay, is there a mellower, nicer dude than Ted Alexandro?
No.
Ted Alexandro comes in and he's a killer.
Yeah.
He destroys on stage and he's the nicest
guy
on stage.
Like, okay.
And I feel that the guys that are really talented,
Dave
Attell could not be nicer to staff, right?
There,
I feel like when you have that talent, it's easier to be nicer to other people.
Okay. She just her attitude was that she was very disrespectful to one of the opening acts, and you know she had her reason. The opening act didn't do a great job of bringing her up one night.
Well, didn't pronounce her name properly, and I was at that show.
She was awful to him, but she was awful to him in a way that could have been dealt with differently. Meaning, hey, tell a member of the staff. We'll talk to the guy. We'll make sure that guy doesn't.
But that happens, Joel. Wasn't I at a show where I was hosting? Listen, somebody was awful to me because I mispronounced their name.
I know.
Do you remember that?
And that's Exhibit A. When I teach how to be an MC,
that happens
in comedy class. I tell you, it's very important to get these things right and you need to get right. But it was just there was something about her that people didn't like about her.
Yeah.
She clearly didn't like us. We clearly didn't like her. Her shows were great. She was very nice to the fans. I know when you went out and met her. Look, I stood there and took photos of her with the fans. That was my job.
Sure, sure.
I went out there and took photos of her with the fans for two straight nights. And she was super nice to everybody that stood in line.
She was.
She was nice to you. She was nice to all the old pervs. She was nice to all the young girls.
She was nice.
And you weren't the only one. There were other old pervs.
Come on.
and so she did that, but it was sort of like, man... You know, you're successful. And again, I've said that it will come up that she's an attractive woman. And I sort of feel like, is that part of it too? Is there part of her where she's like, I'm hot and I'm famous and everyone's going to be nice to me?
Yeah, but all this does not make her point wrong. It doesn't. So you don't like her making the point, but it does make her point wrong.
The quickest route to a bad reputation in comedy is if you're nice to the fans and shitty to the staff.
Yeah, that was what it was.
That is exactly what her mistake is here, and I've seen that happen with lots of guys. Yeah. Now I'm the opposite. I'm shitty to the comics and nice to the staff. So, but you'll never hear one complaint from any waitress or manager or anybody at any place I've ever worked about me as in terms of being a jerk. And that's the quickest way to get a bad rap in comedy because the people. It is the bartenders and waitresses and all the staff that will shit on you.
This is what happened this week, though, and this is why I'm even talking about it. And I don't like to talk about this stuff that happens at the club because it's not public things. It's private things that happen. what happened with this interview and what happened when this went viral, because I was just, here's what I saw on my Facebook, and I remember talking on the phone about it, like, why is everybody mad at Eliza today? And then it was like, we had to find this article. And then Splitsider and some of these other websites, Jezebel covered it, was that that thing that I knew about Eliza for the last year and a half or whatever
got exposed,
is now exposed to the world, that that's who that person is behind the scenes.
I don't think what she said reflects it, that. I think you have
a
personal.
Everybody that's got that Eliza story,
well, maybe
like
within
me,
the industry,
is now coming out and going, boy, it's about time people know what a phony this person
is.
Well,
it's kind of like when like a congressman gets caught doing some gay sex stuff and people go, oh, I'm surprised. Oh, really? Like, there are people that know the real story. Okay, let me put this, but I don't know Eliza Schlesinger personally.
Yeah.
I will just say that she somehow managed to not get hired on The View. At the same time that they hired Raven Simone. Complete and utter lunatic.
Yeah,
they hired Raven and told Eliza to go hit the skids.
I mean, look, if you don't want to be... One thing about show business that I found, and this is just a general thing, and I didn't know this, I guess I've always been good at this, at least I think I've been good at this, is I try to be easy to work with, and that helps.
I think you probably are easy to work with.
And, you know, if you have two people that are equally funny or equally talented, generally, when people got to work with you, they'll pick the guy that's easier to work with. And sometimes, they won't pick the funnier person because they're a dick, or they're hard to work with, or they're
absolutely
challenging.
Yeah, but sometimes creative people are hard to work with because they're creative people.
And
you have to admit that she's pretty darn good at what she
does.
She's
very good at what she does.
She's a very good writer.
She's
very good at promoting
herself.
She's done a great job. And I think the easiest way nowadays people find to win an argument is to do character assassination. And that's what we're doing. We're talking about what a lousy person she is. So whatever she said, it's got to be taken negatively. When I think she made a good point that women are telling too many dick and pussy jokes when they should be broadening what they're doing if they want to be good.
I think that's
true. There are women that do it well, and she was just saying there should be more women that just talking about their vaginas.
But when you talk about women, you can make a point about comedy. Norm MacDonald, who we're all going to agree in this room is a genius. I don't care if you agree or not.
Yeah.
Ted. But, okay, Norm MacDonald did an interview. I put it on my Facebook. I rarely even put links to interviews or articles because I think they're annoying when some people do it. But I put up one about, you know, Norm's not doing Trump stuff. And he was saying to comics, you know, I just think that it's sort of, his point was that it's going to be dated and it's divisive and what's the point?
Yeah.
And he made a point.
Yeah.
And I think here's the difference. Women are a group. When you make fun of a group en masse, when you paint something with a broad brush, it's sort of like me going, hey, boy, don't those Asians all look the same with their little squinty
eyes?
Well,
she's not saying that.
She's not saying that.
She's not saying
that.
She's saying a lot. No, she's
saying all women talk about is vaginas.
No.
And you can't
do that. No, she's saying a large group of them are picking the easy fruit.
That's why they're mad.
And
when you're Norm and you go,
she's saying we're better than that. We can do better than that. Some people are doing better than that. I wish more people would do better than that. Is what she's saying. And just because you don't like
women.
Her, and just because you don't,
women.
No, just because
when Norm says,
she said I can go to these clubs and not tell one from another. I totally disagree with you. I think she made a good point. You just don't like her. I think she's hot.
You can't paint the broad brush. That's the problem with her comments.
He doesn't get this mad at me usually. Look,
guys are buddies.
I would say,
I'm telling you, these guys are going to blow each other in the next 5 minutes. I see it happen.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay,
but
maybe
I'm not that good anymore.
Perhaps a ball jiggle. We'll see how this plays out. The thing is, okay, now Norm will specifically kind of target and go, I don't really get why this is funny or I don't like that kind of thing. But Norm has the credibility because I think on a general personal level, most people like Norm. They respect him as one of the best comics.
And he's a
Eliza
genius. Yeah.
Outkicked her coverage.
If I can use a
sports term.
That might but she was asked about it.
Well,
she had to come up with an answer.
That's
what she thought.
Here's what you
should
teach.
She fell into a trap.
They asked her the question.
Teach this in your comedy class. Don't ever do an interview.
No,
comics should never do interviews because
I'll be leaving. This is an interview, right?
Wow. Podcasts are one thing. Podcasts, you go on, it's like, but if you do an interview with the press, the reporter's job, and I know because I work both sides of the fence,
right.
The reporter's job is to pull the most interesting clips, the most interesting things that are said. And that's going to be, and so when you're a comedian, whenever I go into an interview situation or I go on any TV or radio or anything, I'm trying to get jokes in and hit points.
Yeah.
And so Eliza got into this.
She did a serious interview.
She as they say in wrestling, she did a shoot.
Yeah,
instead of doing a promotional...
It's called a shoot?
Yes, a shoot.
It's called a shoot means you're going off script and you're saying what you really feel.
Oh, okay. When in wrestling, okay. They're like, they go, well, here's what actually happened.
Okay.
When they get out of character.
Right.
So Eliza basically, maybe this is her
character.
She
told us what she really feels.
Yeah.
And I think she's right.
And
the fact you don't like her doesn't make her wrong.
You shouldn't say it in an interview. That's my problem.
I will say that there could be an issue that male comics kind of get away with this more often. Like Bill Burr will say stuff and that'll be kind of controversial and everybody goes, that's just Bill being Bill. And
But he goes on to talk about his dog and all these other things.
No, because
he's
Bill
saying
Burr's,
too many women aren't doing that. Of course, they only have 7 minutes.
Bill Burr's lovable and
Eliza,
great.
Eliza should be getting support from women. And women, and that's one of the burns, I think, is that women have looked up to her. And all those women that came to the club to see her that weekend. And all of these people. And then she just turns around.
Would
and
you feel better if you gave
them.
No, yeah, she could give you
a
list
of.
Move. She's mentioned Tina Fey. And
yeah,
I'm sure there's, there's
mean,
a lot of other female comedians that are doing
going,
but not
but,
as many.
But that's like me going.
There's too many that
who's
are.
Who's a good comic? Oh, let me think for a minute. Oh, geez, who can I come up with? Richard Pryor. That's like not even a fucking answer. That's not even a I didn't fucking go to the depths of anything.
Like everybody
when people
agrees.
Ask me who I like, I go, here's who I right. like. And I go, Robert Schimmel. And they look at me like I'm a fucking idiot.
No,
and then I go, Woody Allen's stand-up is funny. And no one's fucking heard that. And then I go, well, I really like Richard Pryor and George Carlin.
Yeah,
and they go,
lame.
Oh, thank you for giving us the answer we wanted to hear.
Instead
and
you go,
yeah.
I
like Greg Giraldo or something.
You're,
and they go, who the fuck is that? And he's dead.
Like,
I'm all for people saying what they think.
But
now, that might be wrong. You know, if you're up there and you have an opinion and somebody asks you about
I'm a big fan of Gary Muledeer.
I mean,
that's not going to get you anywhere.
No, but she wants to promote female comedians, and here's what they should be doing. Be less vagina-centric.
Right. One thing
is
I'm
that
making
a word,
a note
vagina-centric?
Speaking of vagina-centric, this whatever you have on the end of your... Your recorder.
We
need a visual of that.
I think it's a Merkin is what that is.
Yeah, Joel's talking into Lola Falana's bush
yes.
from the 70s.
By the way, I'm going to order 24 foam windscreens so I can throw them at your head throughout the show. That was the most fun I've had.
All right.
Okay.
So have I won that argument?
No.
I think I
first
have.
First of all, you
No, I, she okay, she outkicked her coverage. What I'm saying is she doesn't have the
she
reputation to get away with that. And
how does
she
answer
also,
the question? So what's the right answer?
Well,
what should she have said?
She came off like a country
I know, but
singer.
What should she have said? How do you say that? How do you say, geez, I wish they were a little more diverse in what they were doing?
You could have said, you know, I try to make my act a little bit more cerebral. I get bored of that act. And
that sounds a little bit uppity.
Yeah,
that
but it
sounds like I'm better than you.
It's not as uppity as.
Yes.
She should have focused it more on herself. Whenever you say, I prefer to do it this way, instead of going, she said there's a bunch of women comics.
No, she said, I can't tell one from the other, and I think that's true.
I think, here's how I would answer the question.
I like sex even though I'm fat. I like sex even though I'm old.
Do you know how many fucking fat hipster guys are doing open mics right now thinking they're Louis?
Yeah, 100. 100.
It's ridiculous.
500.
I was doing I like sex even though I'm old.
Yeah.
And that kind of got old.
That's good.
No, that's
I
old.
I mean, it's what. Well, listen. Here, but
well,
here's
you should
thing,
be able
people,
to work that.
But here, okay, just what you said is what she should have said in that way. You start out. You're a new comic. You're going to do vagina jokes. Guys are going to do dick jokes.
Yeah.
And you find your voice, and you talk about other things. And you find that later. And Eliza, a dozen years into her career, has moved past that.
Right.
But you can't look at everybody who is trying to be something and doing jokes that they think are going to hit.
Right.
And jokes that do hit, and they do it because they work. Now...
You have to be broader than that. I'm doing Negro jokes nowadays. That's what my where I'm at.
There's you see, the door right there. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for doing jokes from the 50s.
Enjoy the Ted is Ted.
That's when I grew up.
Ted's got a golf date, so we got to move on. He really does. He's literally going
he's
to golf.
Wearing a,
I know,
he's
not,
wearing a country club polo shirt.
Got golf shoes
he's in golf shoes. He's going to golf. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to change topics. Let's agree to disagree.
All
now, look, you... Think,
and if Eliza comes back to town,
you think,
Ted Moss, you can reach me at 1-800.
Now I do have, we do know a guy that's a friend of Eliza and always defends her. So I don't know her personally. I can't castigate her. I just know that this comes whenever you go.
Yeah,
all these guys down on all these guys down on Bleecker Street are doing the same act. Those guys are going to get mad. Yeah. And if you say all women, if you put them all into a class.
I think you're right.
They're going to take a class
That's
action
the
approach.
That's the mistake.
So she made a mistake there. I think maybe people
think
are a little hard on her also there is a sexist curve in which they'll be a little harder on. Look at the grief they gave Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
Christy Ilias' special was every bit as shitty as hers. That's as unfunny a special as I've ever seen.
I don't know. Amy Schumer. Didn't get we don't even talk about Amy
but it's
Schumer.
The guys.
So I think the women get a little bit of a harder. Okay. It's double standard. Because for me, I always tell there's a girl I met the other night who's a young blonde, and she had a pretty good set. And I put her on the show. No, not her.
A comedy
I'm talking
set.
About the comedy, yeah.
She had a good set.
Yeah.
When Ted hears a blonde has a good, set.
No.
You're talking about her tits.
I put her on a show hoping. I was hosting, and she did well.
I don't know why you told us that.
And I'm thinking, will this girl be doing comedy in 6 months?
I don't know.
Because if she has an advantage built in. She's an attractive blonde. And then she also, I think probably the reason a lot of these women do all this, like my vagina stinks, like baked beans on the stove in the summertime.
Yeah.
Is because they have the visual advantage of looking like being attractive and being a cute presentation. Then they can
it's
go,
out of context.
I waxed my butthole. And then you go, I can't believe the school teacher just said she waxed her butthole.
I mean,
Well, we had a black girl talking about eating ass up in Saginaw the other day.
Well,
yeah.
We should
it's
have.
It's not that bad. If you accidentally
when
do it,
in Saginaw,
like,
do as the Sagonians do. That's how I like to say. But
in the Sag Nasty.
When you're. I mean, look, I think her answer to that question should be, I think women should say whatever they want to say. It'd be nice to see more diversity in their set, but I think a good comedian will figure that out eventually. That's saying far too many women are doing the same thing.
No, I think that's true.
You know,
I think that's true.
Seinfeld goes out there and scolds, you know,
yeah,
why are you going to work dirty?
Scolding.
And no, he does.
You know
what?
Listening to
his interviews.
The reason, when I was taking Bill's class, the reason I liked Joel when Joel came in is because Bill was going, oh, you're doing great. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And Joel came in and said, that's not so good.
Yeah.
You're punching down.
I know.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
You're the old pervert. I don't know. You should be doing that.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, I need to change. Bill was just. You're doing great. So I like the negative criticism. I like being corrected.
Here's what people in interviews, people love this. If you specifically target one person and kind of like slam them and hint at who you're slamming so that it's not obvious.
Yeah.
If you take an ad hominem attack at a class of people like Howard Stern shits on podcasts.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, Joel and I have been Stern fans forever.
Yeah.
So we don't care.
Yeah,
Howard's old.
I expect that from him.
But he went after Ari Shaffir, and then that made a whole bunch of other podcasters.
Oh, okay.
A whole bunch of podcasters got mad. It's this cycle now, and Eliza got caught in the cycle.
So
we got a Twitterverse.
Right.
So you say something, then everybody on Twitter's got to get their joke off.
The outrage is real.
Yeah.
She's smart.
She's talented. She said the wrong thing.
She said
the right thing the wrong way. How about that?
There was a genius comedian. Who and I'm just leaving this here, and we'll move on. Okay, please let me make a point. If you want. there was a genius comedian in the 80s who we all loved, who America loved,
Dennis Wolfberg,
and he told, and he said, and again, you guys can read between the lines, but he told the current, he was an older comedian, and he told the newer comedians that you can't say filth, slime, filth in front of people. And look how that turned out for him. All right, let's move on. All right. Speaking of comics, I know this, and Corey, I don't know where you are on this, but I've been talking to Ted for the last couple of weeks about coming on. I'm dying up here on Showtime. I think I reviewed the first episode. Have you seen it yet or no?
I still have not seen it.
Well, fuck you then. That's why we got to get
into
it.
You were so down on it.
I am down on it, but Ted watched it. And since
yes,
Ted's,
I did.
Ted's
I watched
the,
I
the
watched
link,
it twice.
You saw the first two episodes. They've aired
twice.
Three. I've seen all three.
Yeah, no, I've seen just the first two.
Give us your take in general after two episodes, and then I'll review the three.
I think it's a wonderful premise. I was excited to see the show. I wanted to hear about it, and I thought it was horrible. It was just the worst directed, worst acted, worst produced show. I mean, from an art standpoint and the look of it, I think it's great.
Yeah.
And I think it's sad because I think it's a missed opportunity.
There's no
protagonist that you can find. There was one that killed him off in the first half hour of the
we'll
first episode. So he's
second.
Not a protagonist. I don't know what point of view we're coming from. The people aren't really in character, because the writing's so bad, the actors aren't good.
It feels phony.
The costuming is wrong. I was that age in 1973, so I know what they should be wearing. And you don't show that it's 1973 by showing Harry Bush. You show it by showing lots of girls not wearing a bra. Because the biggest the biggest coup we made in the late 60s was to get everybody to take their bras off. I haven't seen a lot of girls flopping around the stage.
That's a great point. Susan Anton would like go on the Tonight Show without
yeah.
a bra.
Yeah, everybody would. Everybody would.
The girl
Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, the clothes that the guys are wearing.
The girl that's playing Boozler, and Boozler was known for having great tits back in the day.
Yeah.
Was she?
And she's
was that in her bio?
Boozler. Well, that,
is that who she's supposed to be?
I think she was
she had a great
in
set.
Episode 3, which you haven't
yeah,
seen
I think
yet.
So.
But
well,
I think
she was in 2, okay, 2 yeah. at the end of it, but you could barely notice. But I mean, they're so obvious. They had a stripper, and they pulled off her pants to show she had bush.
Yeah,
big
yeah,
on the
yeah.
camera. Just say it's 1973.
That's a problem.
And that's not convincing.
That's a problem in so many TV and movies where they have to, like, oversell.
Yeah, well, the writing is terrible.
They either
it's not funny, which is a criticism that they're trying to be
funny. And even the jokes
funny.
They tell, they don't tell the jokes
they either,
well.
They either normcore everything out so it doesn't look like a specific, it, like, looks faintly like a time.
Right.
Or they overdo it, and everybody's wearing ridiculous big collars and stuff. So.
Oh, no, this show, they're going for an exact time,
yes, they are.
Place,
they are.
Date,
but
month, week.
If
I mean,
the protagonist
really
is the club, I got to assume the protagonist is the club. They got to do more about the club. If the protagonist is the lady that's running the club,
yeah, no,
she has to be more compelling.
Did you read her the book?
No.
Her the book's great, and you should read it. I recommend the book for anybody that's in comedy, especially you who were around for that time. And we were, me and Corey were around towards the end of that time. Because
in 73?
Well, here's the
what
thing.
What year were
no.
you born,
the
Joel?
The story of I'm dying
we,
up here
we were,
starts in
we
the 70s
the
and, ends, and ends in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
So this show, if it's going to run multiple seasons, runs that. Now, the point of this show is it's based on the Comedy Store, which
right,
I'm sure you figured
right,
out.
Right,
and, you know, and the lead character, Goldie, is based on Mitzi Shore.
Right, right,
and,
right. I got
and
all that.
The comics are loosely, like, the blonde is based on Boozler. I think the young black kid is basically is based on Jimmy Walker. The Hispanic guy is based on Freddie Prince.
Is that right, Al Madrigal supposed
There's
to
a guy from Detroit, and that really came up in the second one. Who
Mike Binder?
It's sort of Mike Binder, I guess. Mm. Although... I think the arc of where he goes is going to determine, is this guy supposed to be Leno, or is he supposed to be Binder? Is he supposed
Leno's
to be
Leno's from Boston.
But
right.
but I mean, there anyway, are guys right. from Boston on the show, but they're not really
well,
Leno-y.
Okay, let me ask this. How is the comedy in the show?
It's terrible.
It's okay.
It's
okay.
Terrible. That is, okay.
Even
that
the jokes
is
they
a...
tell, they don't tell them right.
But
the joke, you know,
the
tell
jokes,
your face, that was wrong.
The jokes.
The one they did, you know, did you get who'd you have to blow to get the Hawaiian shirt? It wasn't even
those
stated right. It was, like, wrong.
And the jokes feel like contemporary comedy, not 70s comedy. That's one they notice. They feel like jokes written by guys today. Which
well, because they're afraid people are going to, if you ever watch, like,
oh,
old.
Like, yeah.
I love it, to watch
old comedy
Carson.
Is old comedy.
I like to watch old Carson.
Right, right.
Okay.
And then it's always be like, so I went to my analyst the other day.
Yeah.
You got one of these guys. They, you know, you lay on the couch and do the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the tempo is all different.
But that's okay.
Thing.
That's what.
If
but you
want
also
to
don't
see.
Show the show isn't from the comics perspective.
If you
they
want,
don't show the audience his perspective. They don't do any build up. There's no emotional attachment to anybody in the show. It's terribly written.
Wow.
It's terribly directed.
Ted
and
is
it's poorly
slamming
acted.
This.
It is. It's horrible.
If you
even the relationship between the blacks and the whites isn't even similar to what it would have been in those days. It's horrible.
If you want to see that 70s style of comedy, and old Tonight shows are really hard to come by unless you go on. There's
well,
a show
Antenna
called
TV
Norm Crosby's Comedy Shop.
Oh, yeah.
Which I believe is on Amazon now. I know it was on Hulu. It might be on both now. If you watch those were done in like the late 70s. It's basically the Comedy Store on television.
Right.
And those guys, even the famous guys that you know, and some of them you know and some of you don't know, are not good to a contemporary audience. Those jokes don't work. They're not funny to us. They were funny to those people, and they were good when they did them.
Right.
So in a way, you can't do those because the whole thing would sound terrible.
Yeah, but it's a drama. It's not a comedy. It's okay.
My,
it's okay.
Here's one of the problems with it.
And
here's some thoughts. Okay, because if you read the book is about the Comedy Store, and it's all the real characters. It's Leno. It's Letterman. It's, you know,
now,
Tom
you know,
Dreesen.
I don't read Joel,
but if you want to read a book about that time, it's one of the greatest things ever been written about comedy. I love it. Corey loves it. We're
it's
huge fans.
It's not
of
a
it.
Long book.
You
it's
know,
only a 200 pages.
You can read it to me.
I talked to Mark Ridley, who was around, and Mark Ridley literally opened the Comedy Castle because he went and saw the Comedy Store.
Right.
And,
right. Right. I understand
and
that.
And he thought the show was pretty good when I mean, based upon the one episode. When
I'm dying
to,
up here. He
yeah,
thought
he
it was
liked,
good.
He liked I'm dying up here. So there are differences of opinions. One thing I didn't like was that they didn't bring enough of the real stuff in. So here's what they've done over 3 episodes. The black kid really is kind of Jimmy Walker because Jimmy Walker, they said, used to do work at Mitzi's house.
Right.
And that would be currying favors with Mitzi.
Right.
And that sort of has come up in 3 episodes. Episode 2, you see him working out the house. Okay, so that has come up. By episode 3, you've got the basis of the strike. in the sense that the comics were mad about their pay, and they worked the Rival Club, which I guess is supposed to be like
improv. Well, they mentioned that in the second show. They're talking about the Rival Club.
They worked the Rival Club because the guy at the Rival Club gave them a free buffet.
Right.
They got free shrimp.
Yeah.
And then Goldie said, oh, you can't do that club if you're doing this club. And that is something that really happens, and that really happened then and still happens in
comedy. Did Goldie wear a bra and have a tattoo on her chest? Didn't that lady have a tattoo on her chest?
Have. If you're staring at Melissa Leo's tits, you're desperate.
Do you think?
But here's the point.
It's more age appropriate for tattoos.
They did the thing in episode two where the one comic, and this is great for me because this is something I teach in my class. The MC gave the guy a shitty intro. He gave the Mexican guy a shitty intro.
Right.
And
I like that. I like that idea.
I like that too.
I like
the
idea.
So I think the show did get better.
Yeah.
But the thing I said in the first episode where the guy that committed suicide, which Steve, like it was sort of based on Steve Lubetkin jumping off the hotel at the Comedy Store, I thought was going to be a season-long story. There was none of that in episode two and none of that in episode three, so I don't know if they've dropped that or if that was just in the pilot or if that was...
It would be real dark to make that guy the lead character have him jump off at the end of the
series. The lead
character
is the Boozler character, and it's the guy from Detroit who's sort of like Mike Binder, I guess, after three episodes.
You think?
I think there's about four of them because by the third one, the guy's going to quit.
Well, you know what?
I don't know.
You should know who
the
protagonist
is
up front. It's got to be from somebody's perspective. It's got to be somebody that they're coming into this. This is what it looks like to them. And then you can build all the characters around
it. Now, what happens when they open the Westwood Comedy Store? Is it all going to be
that might be in there, too. I don't know.
Well, historically, it might be accurate, but the writing is horrible.
I feel like they are...
The characters don't feel real. The dialogue is terrible.
I felt like they weren't checking the boxes on the first one. And after three, they've checked some of the boxes I wanted them to check. But at the same time... It's still not good.
I don't even care if I see another episode.
No, I know.
And I'd like to know about what happened back then.
Read the book.
Judy Gold shows up as like a Phyllis Diller type that all the young comics hate, this old lady with a borscht belt act. So that I'm sure that was a real thing that happened then. There's a guy with a racist dummy act, which really seems like it's based on Otto and George, although I don't know how much he was around then, where like their dummy's racist.
Yeah.
And... You know, the guy who's talking is like, I can't believe what the dummy says. This dummy's out of control. And they did that, and I sort of enjoyed that, I guess.
Joel enjoys racism.
But I mean, I like that they're using the real stories.
I think that's great, but you still got to tell it like a story.
Now, hold on. Is there an Andy Kaufman analog?
Not yet. Oh, but here's what's going to happen in episode three that, you know, they mention. It's funny. They're only mentioning dead people. They mention Carson. They mention Carlin. They mention Pryor.
Right.
On episode four, because I watched the trailer for episode four after episode three.
Right.
There's a guy who shows up playing Richard Pryor. I guess there's a guy that played Johnny Carson in episode one.
Now, is there going to be a guy playing Robin Williams who comes in and steals everybody's jokes?
I'm sure that I can't imagine that wouldn't come up because that's a big story in the book.
Where they have to put the light on in the green room when he shows up.
But still, you have to tell the story. I know you like it because you're a history buff on comedy, but this is not going to be compelling to anybody but you, Joel.
My review is it's going to take me 10 episodes to figure out if this is any good, which is probably the review saying don't bother watching this, but I feel like I'm too close to this to not watch it.
Yeah.
And people are going to want my opinion on this. And so I sort of need to watch it.
That's kind of the problem with a lot of comedy related stuff.
Last Comic Standing's like that. I watched that because people only wanted me to hear my opinion on it.
Well, as we said last time, I think Mike Birbiglia's movies are really pretty good about it. He's got one on improv and one on stand up.
Yeah.
And those, at least when they go and do comedy on the stage, it is believable. Like they're, you know what I mean?
Right,
their improv
right.
set.
He knows it.
Right. Because they've got Keegan, Michael Key, and, you know, Kate Micucci. He's got like people that do comedy in these movies so that when they go and do like an improv sketch, you go, okay, I see why people would like this.
Yeah.
Or it works. Whereas too many times in movies when they have a comic on any show, it's brutal.
Right.
It's like they hadn't taken Joel's comedy class.
Right. They need that.
Why am I not a consultant on these shows?
Yeah, goddamn. Right.
But you know, Crashing got comedy right. And they,
yeah,
and
I agree.
Doing modern
I
comedy,
agree with that. I agree
they
with
got
that.
Comedy right. And I'm sure there were
yeah,
people
that show feels,
I was
yeah,
around good. And it wasn't like that. And that's fine. And you know, I do feel weird if you were like Elaine Boozler or Jimmy Walker watching this, you'd probably go,
okay,
yeah, they didn't get that right. And if they made If they made
you can
show,
never do that. You
if they made
never
a show about the Detroit comedy scene in the early 2000s,
see it different.
We would feel like that was wrong.
But what's good about Crashing is at least it feels the actual atmosphere of comedy feels.
But you
right.
have a protagonist.
You're
you
never
going to
get like the specific.
It's
in 2003, you weren't
doing
that.
Here's what it feels
bit.
Like to be that guy.
Yeah.
They aren't doing that. To tell a good story, you got to tell it from somebody's perspective. I know they're trying to tell the history of this club. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But really, if you want people emotionally involved, you got to give the audience a position to stand. Who are you? What position
well,
are you seeing
it from?
You're
supposed to be on the side. Okay, here's what I'm telling. It's an ensemble. The comics are the heroes. The club owners are the villains. And
so
the
accurate.
Goal is to get on Johnny Carson and, that, and I think, you know, here's the thing. They're all trying to get on Johnny Carson
and walk in front
but
of the bus.
But that's the thing. That's the dark side of achieving that goal is walk in front of the bus. So they've done better after three to make it there. I get it. If you don't want to watch, I get it. I get it. You watch two, you try, you don't want to watch it. I get that you don't watch it. Corey, I think you would, I think like me, you would be perverse in trying to find all the real world analogs. And you'd also be like, yeah, this is phony bullshit. But I think you'd at least, you'd enjoy playing whack-a-mole with, hey, there's a guy who's Judy Tenuta or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
yeah. I'll get, there's a guy who's Judy Tenuta. So they're very accurate on the show.
Judy's got a big dick. No, I'm kidding.
I'll get around to that eventually.
But anyway, so
But you
got
to tell a story to everybody. You can't tell a story to the people that are seasoned comedians.
But,
that's a very small audience.
Well,
and, you know, it's just poor storytelling.
Yeah,
when the guy had that note that he left for the girl, where he referenced, you know, whatever it was, on that note he left they didn't make a reference to that earlier. He never said that saying. He said something totally different. It's just
problems.
Poor storytelling. It's not written well.
I guess the problem is, look, the people who go and make things in television programs in Hollywood are people in show business.
Yeah.
And show business is endlessly fascinating to people in it.
Yeah.
No, La La Land.
You don't
we're going to talk about that next.
Yeah,
that's,
you don't see
that's
a,
what it's
you don't
about.
See a show. Yeah, well, that's true.
We're going to talk about La La Land before Ted goes.
You don't see a show about, like, deep sea angling. You know what I mean? No one makes a show about, like, marlin fishing.
And no one would call that out. Or the people that would
Babe Winkleman would be like, look, that's not the Eric kind of lure.
But the
problem is, but
if you get comedy wrong and comics turn on it, now you've even lost that base of people who should be embracing it. And I feel like the show isn't
you
getting
can,
it.
You know, what do we just learn from this discussion of this Eliza Schlesinger? You can't please comics.
All right.
You can't make these bastards happy.
All right, Ted, La La Land, show business. I know we talked about you watched it, and I guess you watched it recently and not when it came out, like Corey and I. But so go ahead. And I watched it recently, too, so I wanted to get your thoughts as an old whitey.
Yeah, as an old white person.
As an old whitey
actually,
who's on his way to the golf course.
You know, let's be honest.
Golf
we
with all the
heard,
other old whiteys.
We haven't heard enough about older white men. We don't know their feelings on things, and they're very underrepresented.
Well, Donald and I watched it together. No, I actually liked it.
Yeah, it's great.
I actually liked it because, you know, I'm a sap for old musicals.
Yeah.
I like Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
I like Music Man. I like that. It's a little bit corny now. This was not quite as corny, and it was a musical. And a lot of singers in my family. I love watching
good
singing performances.
Yeah.
I think it's a great combination. Now, ultimately, it's a movie made by movie people for movie people, like you guys were saying.
Sure.
And I totally agree with that. But it had a nice plot. It had a nice storyline.
Yeah.
They had two different goals they were heading for, and they came together, but they had to break up in order to hit their goals.
And it's,
I think it's a wonderful story.
You know what? I remember, was it your movie of the year, Corey? Because I know it was my, I think it was my number two or three.
It was high on my list.
I have to look.
So
it was one of those things where I saw it in the theater and I was like amazed, like how did they do that? But then at the same time, I was kind of like, you know, I think I wanted a happier ending. And then, but then watching it again, because
I
got the 4K Blu-ray, I realized it was a happy ending.
Yeah.
Because it is about living your dreams.
They both
and
got what they wanted.
They both got to live their dreams, even though they had to not do it together. I'm spoiling La La Land a little bit.
Yeah.
They didn't do it together, but I loved it. Here's what a homo I am. I've been listening to the soundtrack in the car. I mean, I'm kind of really into it now.
Yeah,
and it might be because I'm going to LA very soon. And I'm planning on.
I thought all the period stuff looked good. I thought that's great. Yeah, I thought
it was.
It's like Harry Chapin's Taxi. Everybody got what they wanted, just in a different way.
Yeah,
you know?
They did a nice job. So if you haven't seen La La Land, I was more impressed with it the second time because I knew what it was, and I wasn't expecting it to be something that I thought it was going to be, and I think it's better for it. I think it's better for not being that. And I think if and I was worried that more people wouldn't like it as much as I did. And it turns out everybody loves it.
Well, it's always a little weird when they break into song.
Yeah,
like just walking down the road. But they did it well. If you're going to do it, they did it pretty darn well.
As I said when we did this on our movie show, 5 years from now, not one soul will care about Moonlight.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And La La Land will be on Broadway, winning Tonys.
Oh my God. Yeah.
They're going to adapt.
I'll bet you're right.
It's going to last. There's just an immediate curve, much like Eliza Schlesinger. Everybody are a bunch of what I'm saying is there's a bunch of twats out there that when something's successful have to go, well, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And they have to go, and La La Land will endure. It's a good movie.
So, yeah.
5-10 years from now, people will remember it and it'll be on lists of things they like, and not one soul will care about Moonlight.
Old white men like it. When I'm dead and gone, you'll still be watching La La Land.
Man, I'm not even a musical guy, and I like it. And that's why I'm kind of like, man, this is a real thing.
It's a great story.
And the other thing is that, you know, for me, going out there, it's like I'm actually going, I have an invite to Warner Brothers.
Wow.
Which is because
to be funny?
No. I know. It's funny because I've told this person, too. I'm like, you know, you're La La Land. You work at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
A girl I know.
Yeah.
And so she's like, well, come to the set. So it's almost exactly some of that stuff the movie really hits home because it's like that. So, yeah, I'm excited to actually go to L.A., and this has sort of inspired me to go like – and look, I'm not a guy who – I've never done the L.A. thing as a show business thing. And when I go out to L.A., here's one thing I'm not doing, and please stop asking me. I'm not doing any stand-up. And go shove that up your ass.
Really?
Because I'm not. I'm there to
kind
I'm
of been
comedy,
there, done that.
I'm
you're not worried about that thrill.
Night. If I thought I was going to go to L.A. do a show and get famous, I would fucking go out to L.A. and do it. But I know that's not how it works, and so I don't care. And you know,
so I mean, shouldn't go to do a show in L.A.
If you want to do it because it's fun. For
you don't think the L.A. Express is my ticket to becoming famous?
No. Well, the guy that won that, Jason Patterson, did a great job. By the way, one of my students. I'm proud
won
of that.
That last year.
Won that last year.
Beat me last year.
Beat you, yeah.
As I went up first
you did very
in
good.
The lineup.
You made the finals.
I was first in the lineup,
The lineup of the finals, I think, was 50% Joel Fragamenti Advanced Comedy Class students.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that.
Why did I go first there, Joel?
I don't know, because Bill made the list.
Oh,
and Bill didn't want you to win.
Yeah, apparently.
No, I don't know if that's the case.
No,
it's
fine.
But yeah, you had a great set that night. And again, contest.
No, there was a lot of good comedians doing
but,
that, I thought.
I'm not going to do comedy. And maybe one day I will still pursue that dream of comedy in L.A. And maybe
have you ever been out there on the lots?
I've never
lots?
Even been out there, so that's
oh
I'm
wow!
Excited to go.
I've been to Universal Studios.
Super...
Actually, my daughter worked out there in the industry.
That's awesome. Yeah,
yeah. She did some
and
movies
I know
with
Corey's
Oliver
gone
Stone
out there,
and Ben Stiller, and did a lot of that.
Corey's
kind of
a
stuff.
Frequent visitor.
Yeah.
More so, Corey used
LA
to work out
times.
There.
Oh, interesting.
Corey used to hang and with,
really?
With the big wigs in
yes.
show business.
Really cool.
Like
somewhat. Yes.
Like
well,
Brett Russell and
I had a look, Owen Wilson gave me some of his salad.
Oh,
you know, so no, it's I think it's worth going at least to like check out the Comedy Store.
Sure. Yeah, I think you can do that. I think it's worth doing. Yeah. All right. So anyway, let's move. So La La Land.
If you're gonna do one touristy thing, the Comedy Store has that weird aura.
Yeah.
Of weirdness and magic. Like if you go to the Laugh Factory or the Improv, it's like going to any other comedy club you've ever been to. But if you go to the Comedy Store. Do go hang out at the Comedy Store and go like on a Monday night.
Yeah,
and go.
I'd like to do that.
You'll
I'd
see
like
Don Barris will be there.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure, you know, with my schedule, it's like I don't know that I'm going to fit that in.
Well, a couple local guys have worked out there at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
I know Jeff did, and I talked to somebody the other day that worked out there, too.
So, you know, it's a thing that I will do eventually.
You should do the Universal Studio Tour, too. Yeah. The Back Lot Tour.
Yeah.
He's going to get the Warner Studio Tour.
Oh. No, I'm actually going as an. I'm not even doing the tour. I'm going as
going,
an invited guest. I was told
you're going to be on
because my friend works there that I can get a pass and we will walk around the studio with, you know, obviously it's a close set.
Cool.
We're not going to walk on that, but we can sort of roam around the studio because my friend works there. So that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be
sort
fun.
Of like as Sebastian snuck onto Warner Brothers to find Mia Emma Stone working there.
All right, so Warner Brothers security, you've been warned.
No, they're carrying
automatic weapons.
I believe they actually are doing a background check on me to allow me in.
Really?
So fuck all of you if you don't think I'm a VIP. You know,
they're probably listening to this podcast.
Aren't you a member?
I'm a guy with a podcast.
Aren't you a member of a gang that's being tracked by the FBI?
Teaching up. Shh. By the way, make or cancel your plans accordingly. The Gathering of the Juggalos in Oklahoma City will Upchuck and Fun will be there. Last week of July. Look forward to that.
I will get right on not going.
Get your
ticket. All right.
Corey is hurrying to not book his tickets. Look at him. He's in a rushed panic to not go. Look at
how
him.
Close and how cheap would the gathering have to be for me to go? I'll think about that. And,
All right, let's move on here. I saw a movie. I saw a documentary, something on Netflix that I liked. It's called Saving Banksy.
What, do you have a tea time, Ted? You got to go?
I know. I've given Ted the invitation because
they're trying to get me out of here at this point.
I did
point.
The Ted
yeah.
agenda. Now we're going to talk about something you know nothing about
all
and
right.
you had the chance to
so
go.
So I'll excuse myself.
Do you want to go?
Yeah.
That's all right. We'll talk about Saving Banksy.
I'll go golfing.
Ted Moss, where can we find you? What can you plug? Where can we find out
I've got
more
something
about
really,
you?
Really big coming up. I'm not going to tell you.
Are
about.
You serious?
Yeah, absolutely.
Comedy
really,
wise?
Really big.
Awesome.
I'm not telling you about it.
All right. Don't tell me.
I can't tell you for another month.
All right.
Huge. All right. Huge. Huge comedy news.
Big comedy
coming
news.
From
be
Ted
sure
Moss,
to forget all about that.
From the part-time comedy
do
guy.
Do you have this? And this is, I should probably ask you off the air.
It's
going to
be Mossarino's Productions.
Do you have that photo of you and Eliza?
Yes, I do.
I'm going to run that on the show. Is that okay?
Yeah.
On the website.
Yeah,
can
sure.
you make sure to send that to me? Find
yeah,
that
yeah,
to
yeah,
me,
yeah.
Send
yeah.
me a link on Facebook.
It's a very good photo of me. I'm kind of standing behind her. I look quite skinny.
And I think it's a good photo.
Yeah, it was somebody who actually liked Eliza.
And I believe
standing with Eliza.
And I believe I took the
yes,
photo.
And I hope Eliza listens to your podcast.
I do, Eliza. And believe me, if Eliza wants to come on the show, I will talk to
Eliza. Ahead of the curve. Saying what
she
should say.
But thanks for joining us.
You just have an attitude towards my friend,
listen, good luck out there. I hope your balls are long and straight.
All right. Yeah. Is that a golf thing?
It's
I don't
a golf
know.
Joke. All right. That's why I say.
All right. Thanks, guys. Nice meeting you, Corey.
Thanks. Corey, do you like Ted? Did we win that argument?
Don't shank your balls. All right.
Thank you, Ted. Cheers. We'll talk to you. Yeah. Send me that photo. That's going to be on. You can see that. Go to joelradio.net. See Ted. See Eliza. It's better than looking at me and Corey.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I think that's a good thing.
No disagreements there.
Yeah. So anyway, Saving Banksy's on Netflix. You know, they do these Banksy documentaries, and I've watched, you know, Exit to the Gift Shop. I know we both liked a lot, and they did Banksy Does New York, where they kind of followed his New York creations around for a month. And then they did this one, which is about, like, Banksy did some artwork in San Francisco around Exit to the Gift Shop, and most of it was destroyed. And there's a collector who said, I'm going to save a Banksy. And unlike the New York one where you saw everybody sort of carving them up when they did that with the Banksy that he did in Detroit, where people cut it out of the wall right. and then they sell it for millions of dollars.
Literally, so when Banksy was in Detroit, he did one on a wall that got power washed.
Yeah.
The owner of the building did not realize what the fuck it was. Yeah. And there were people from, like, the women at the hair salon.
Right.
And people from the neighborhood ran over and were like, don't do this. And they power washed it off the wall. And then another one was at the Packard plant.
Yeah.
And the guys literally cut a section of the wall out of this decaying plant and pulled the piece out of it and put it in a gallery.
Right. So here's what this guy did. Now, you've seen that story, and we've also heard about the guys who sell it for millions of dollars. And what the story of this movie is that I thought was great, and I expected that when I sat down to watch this, because I'm a white guy who thinks he's funny, so I like Banksy stuff, or I think it's, I don't know, I like
I don't
Banksy.
Know if those necessarily correlate, but okay.
Well,
yeah.
Banksy was on the old Stuff White People Like. That was one of the early Stuff White People Like Banksy, so I guess I fall into that trap.
Sure.
But I was expecting that movie about, you know, art versus commerce. I was expecting that. And that's what Exit to the Gift Shop is about, too.
Now, officially ever said Exit to the Gift Shop is fake?
No, you don't know.
Okay.
So, but this one, they get a guy, and what this guy's point is, and this is like kind of a rich guy who loves art, is he decided to cut out a Banksy because they were being destroyed. The city of San Francisco had a mandate where you had to paint them over or you'd get fined. So his thing was, can I convince this building over to give me the Banksy? But his attitude was like, I'm not going to sell the Banksy. What I want to do is put it into a museum. I will spend the money to preserve this Banksy. I will donate it to a museum so people can come see it. Okay. Here's the problem. Now, that sounds great. And I go, okay, this is the hero of the story. And it is. And he is, ultimately. But when you talk to a museum will not accept art that is not, first of all, it has to be authenticated that it was done by the artist or museums won't take it.
Right.
It also has to be consensually there by the owner, if by the owner or the author or the artist must have sold it consensually.
Which is to prevent forgeries and
stolen stuff. Sure. Here's the problem with Banksy. Banksy did not give explicit instructions for this guy. So this guy says, hey, San Francisco Contemporary Museum of Art, I got this Banksy. Do you want it? And they go, yeah, we want your Banksy. And then they told the guy, by the way, we can't take your Banksy because Banksy doesn't authenticate his work. So then the guy gets a hold of Banksy through whatever channels, and Banksy goes, yeah, it's me. But he's still, like, but because Banksy doesn't want his stuff in museums, he only wants it where he did it. So the guys that, when Banksy's get destroyed, that's Banksy's point, is that it's temporary. So the whole thing becomes this can of worms about, then the snooty rich art collectors show up. Mm-hmm. And they go, look, this Banksy that you cut down isn't anywhere. The museum's not going to put it on. Let me give you this money for it. And so it becomes this thing where this guy's got a Banksy. He can't make money on it. No one can see it. I won't even ruin what ends up with this Banksy while this guy's storing it, but it's real funny. And it's this whole thing about this fucking guy who seems to, from my perspective, get it right about, hey, we're going to show this to people because Banksy's this great artist, and in 20 years there may not be any Banksy's to look at, and it's not going to be hanging in a rich guy's house, to, I can't even fucking do anything with this. I got my hands on top of my head, frustration. And they did a real nice job with it. I thought it was well done. Yeah. Exit Through the Gift Shop's ultimately a better, more interesting, funnier documentary. But I thought that this did a good job of showing that argument.
Now, the question is this a work?
Well, Banksy didn't make this, and so I don't think it's a work. But
is
you know,
involved in it in any
well,
way?
You know, is Banksy a work? And, yeah. You know, we talked about that when with 3D from Massive Attack, and I did a Joel Radio exclusive investigation.
Deep investigative, yes.
Which, you know what? I don't know, Corey, why the mainstream media didn't pick that up, but fuck it.
Well, the MSM is out to get you. They don't want you to know about Banksy.
A girl tells a vagina joke, and everyone goes through hoops, but
Eliza Schlesinger is part of the lizard people.
Do you want to talk... Do you want to talk about Megyn Kelly and Alex Jones?
So, but I'm just saying, with any of the Banksy stuff, I now am under the cloud of this is a work.
Yeah.
This is fake.
Yeah.
I don't think any of it is. I think it's, and in fact, what you're telling me is the message of this movie is exactly the kind of thing Banksy's trying to say.
Well, is
art is bullshit, and it's a burden to be stuck with this painting now.
But is the Banksy character and is the Banksy phenomenon the actual artwork? Is that the performance? Yeah. Is the Banksy persona a performance for 3D, or is it for these guys? Is it for
I think
the dealer? I forget the guy's name, but there's a guy that's always the guy that sells all the Banksy's.
Well,
so who knows?
I think it's like any kind of spoof thing. It's like any kind of put on character. It's not. It's saying the character itself is saying something. Yeah. It's saying the message. It's trying to get across.
Well, what'd you see? I think I'm out of material. no, but I mean, we didn't really do any prep because Ted came early and you came late, so I don't know.
Well, did you see?
What
I mean, look,
you saw
Steve
or...
Harvey's Thunderdome.
Oh my God! Yeah, you asked me if. Well, we had that article. I don't know where that is. I think it was on one of the tech blogs where it was like, so there's some hacker who stole like Orange is the New Black. And all these shows from this Hollywood production house through their network that was unsecured. And they released Orange is the New Black on torrent sites and stuff. Yeah. And apparently he released the full season of Steve Harvey's Thunderdome. And according to the torrent tracker websites, not one person watched an early version of Steve Harvey's Thunderdome. But apparently it's aired. And did you see it?
It's horrific.
Oh my God! Well, what is the premise?
So here's the thing: what it appears to be is that they needed to use the set for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Okay.
And it looks like, for all the world, I'd have to do a side by side comparison, but it appears to be that they just were like, we have this set.
Yeah.
Let's instead of tearing it down, let's do something with it.
Sure.
Looks to be exactly the same set as Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah.
And so it's basically the premise is like a mix between it's a head to head Shark Tank.
Okay.
It's too.
It's about products?
Yeah, it's about products.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
I expected to see people on monkey bars having water shot
well,
at them.
Well, they're
something.
Basically making these poor bastards with their products get on the monkey bars.
What?
Because they have to, like, shill for the audience and sell it. So they have to do these big, stupid pitches.
Oh, okay, player, do your thing.
Right. Oh, right. And so it's, but with Steve Harvey's sparkling wit thrown into the mix. Like, okay, there was like a 15-year-old girl. Yeah.
I told you once, and I'll let you finish. I apologize for cutting you off.
No, no.
When they were looking for a host for The Tonight Show, I came on this show, and it's in the archive, and said, you know who might be good, Corey? Yeah. Steve Harvey.
Uh-huh.
And God damn it, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I apologize. Yeah.
You
I don't
keep
know.
Apologizing for that.
I'm going to continue to apologize.
Yeah, that's
I should be flogged on the streets for saying that now.
I once said Crystal Pepsi is going to be the wave of the future. Look, so anyway, it's all right now, player. All right, we've got Lisa. She's 15 years old. And she comes out, and there's like, so they had a girl that had, literally she had like the Poppin' Fluff, and it was a bag that you put your dog in. And then put a hair dryer on it and dry the dog off. So she puts her pug in this bed. But the dog won't put his legs. The dog like won't
what
put
is
his.
Steve Harvey doing this whole
so
time?
So Steve's just mugging and making the faces.
Because Shark like, Tank at least doesn't
that
have.
That dog wouldn't have. What not have on it. Wouldn't put the leg through the thing. And put the.
And so it's like Steve Harvey gets to goof on the product or the person. Mm-hmm. And so she puts this, literally
oh
puts the pug
God.
In this like. In this like Ziploc bag, in this like spacesuit looking bag.
Oh my God.
And they fill it full of hot air, and you're like, you can dry your dog off with this. Well, it's hard enough to get the fucking dog in the bathtub.
Does Steve have to put his afro in there? Is
yeah,
that
yeah.
the bit?
From
that's
the 70s,
not the gimmick.
Yeah. He put, let me put my head in there, bottled it up. And so.
But I feel like this is almost like Steve Harvey doing, and tell me I'm wrong here, maybe, and this isn't. This is, by the way, I'm blowing dust off a reference that Corey may not
okay.
even get. This sounds like Stan Can on the Mike Douglas show.
Oh, wow.
Did you know what I'm referring to?
Was he like
to?
The products guy?
Stan Can was the gadget guy.
Okay.
He was the fast-talking, nervous gadget guy, and he'd bring out something. Like, he'd bring out a Ronco potato peeler, and it
yeah.
wouldn't work, and it was funny. I think he did Carson.
They used to do
stuff.
That. They were guys like that.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
would,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
There were guys that would come on. This used to be a
oh,
whole
wait.
Thing. They would come on and do the talk show circuit and, like, either review products
right.
or...
Well,
it would be like a consumer advocate reporter.
The Today Show's got a gadget guy, but he's really reviewing the gadgets.
Yeah.
And Stan Can would come on and wear, like, you know.
Kind of screw him up.
Yeah, like a helmet like, with two beer cans in
like
it.
I watched
it would be funny. And that's what I'm thinking Steve Harvey might be doing here, but maybe I'm wrong.
I watched a Carson where they went through, it was like 1978, and they were like, look at all these toys that are out.
Yeah.
And he just went through all the, like, dolls that wet on themselves.
Yeah.
And Carson would just. Play with
yeah,
all of
and
them.
And I feel like that's what Steve Harvey could be doing, but I'm guessing he's not even
he should.
That.
And if he was doing The Tonight Show, he would be doing that. He would be doing all the desperate old Carson bits. Anyway, so this Thunderdome is terrible because, like, you and I always enjoy, what was the show before Shark Tank? American Inventor?
Well, there was American Inventor, and yeah, of course, all that.
And then obviously Shark
the
Tank.
The British version.
Dragon's Den and
Dragon's
Shark Tank
Den
and all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it started in Japan.
Many things do.
Yeah.
Many porn and or mutant monster hybrid terrors start in Japan. Anyway, so it's on this same fucking recycled set from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It must be the cheapest thing to put on TV. And it's just Steve Harvey vamping while... And then what they do is they have two people compete, and then the audience votes on which one
yeah.
they like better. And they give them an opt out where it's like, I'm still trying to figure out how the rules work, but like, you can take a smaller amount of money. Like they basically do this like, would you take $10,000 to get
oh,
the
okay,
fuck out
yeah,
of here?
So
and like so, you're at the risk of the audience well, voted for you and you get the full amount, okay. or you could still leave with a chunk of change.
All right, let me ask you this though.
Yeah.
This is by the way, I've got Stan Can information. We're going to break in with that in a second. Right. To me, now aside from the title, which believe me, Thunderdome, I'm holding it together for this podcast. I want to be rolled over double laughing about the pun there. Is there a dome and is anything fun happening in that?
Neither. No.
So basically they said, here's Steve Harvey's Thunderdome, which sounds like people who should be getting shot with Nerf tennis balls.
Mm-hmm.
But instead they're selling products? What the fuck?
Well, I guess it's a dome in that it's I swear to Christ, it's the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire set, which is kind of an arena set, right?
Oh, unbelievable.
Now,
this has got to be summer.
Yeah.
8 episodes, Memorial Day to Labor Day bullshit. Right? Can you do a Google? Because you're actually using a computer. You got any ratings on this? When did this air? Is there an overnight?
Well, I'm trying to compare I'm doing a visual comparison of the sets.
Yeah, I don't know.
Millionaire.
Yeah, I'm sure this thing bombed. And Steve Harvey, but you know, he's the guy.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy, and Thunderdome probably won't take off, but he certainly got 8 other shows that are successful.
Well, you want to talk about something even worse than Thunderdome. And you're right. Steve Harvey's got 8 shows. I think we've had enough.
Yeah. No, we have. America hasn't.
Okay, he's got the Steve Harvey Show, right? That's the daily talk show where
that is, yes.
It's like, if your woman wants to have an extra pillow on the bed, like, it's like that shit, right?
Well, it is, but
all right,
Harvey is canceling that show and starting a new daytime talk show, which is going to be more like Ellen and be celebrity driven. And that's a whole nother. We never even talked about Don't Look at Steve Harvey in the Hallway.
Oh, my God.
Which is a whole nother can of worms, which we probably can't even get
into.
Which
was fantastic.
I think we should wrap up.
He wrote Steve Harvey, just in brief.
Yeah, look this up, guys, if you have. Well,
yeah, Steve Harvey's put out a memo that was like, I will not, do not talk to me in the hallway.
Yeah.
And make you. And you know what? I kind of on Steve's side here because he's got 11 shows on television.
Yeah.
He doesn't have time, so he's got the daytime talk show.
Yeah.
He's got the Family Feud.
Yeah.
He's now got Thunderdome. Then he got, like, Steve Harvey slapping children. What is that show?
Well, that's Little Big Shots.
Little Big Shots. So that is the worst to me. I will refuse to watch that program. I will be goddamned if we start giving children applause. That is the worst thing in the world. Anyway.
Steve Harvey has, he's become Cosby.
Yeah.
And again, no Cosby jokes there, but he's become Cosby. He's become the guy that, because he's become.
He's
again,
America's beloved black uncle.
Exactly. He's become the black guy that it's okay for white guys to like.
And you know what? On the Family Feud, fine, whatever, do your thing. Yeah. It's just he's overexposed and the premise is real. It's real thin.
But
he's like Art Linklater. They're like, just put him in and he'll react to things and it'll be a hoot.
The other thing about Steve and that memo about Don't Look at Him in the Hallway is that he's doing it with his own production company.
Yes.
So he's like kind of at war with this production company that he's currently with.
Sure.
So I think he just doesn't want to deal with those fucking people. And he's kind of, he's a lame duck over there. And so he's kind of like, let me just do the show. Don't even talk to me because I'm out this bitch.
It was like the madness will end. For my own personal, I'm trying to have more time to myself.
But again, when you're
hosting a show, people will come to you. I mean, I just know this from local TV.
Yeah,
those people are in like motion.
Yes,
in the commercial breaks.
Yes,
there's a producer in your ear at all times. So even if you're just hosting a show, you're always going to be having someone question you. Go here. You're doing this. You're doing that. You're doing move. So
what I've noticed doing local TV as well, or being there with the guys who are doing the local TV, is I think the smart ones, they go, hey, I got 5 minutes. I'm going to go in the green room and say hi to everybody.
Right.
So then I can sort of freely walk. Because I've heard that like Johnny would do that and stuff. That those guys would go and say, a lot of them would just pop in and do that just out of, hey, let me do this.
Well, Leno apparently would always go backstage.
Right.
And
but then I've heard like Letterman doesn't say hi, but a lot of the guys do. And I think if I was doing it to not be a Steve Harvey and to be like, he's a good guy, I think I would go, I need 10, 15 minutes and I'm going to go in and I'm going to shake everybody's hand and I'm going to say hi to everybody. And then I can feel like that at least they all met me before I got busy with what I needed to do. And I know that from doing stuff with ICP and, you know, they go, oh, Upchuck the Clown's here. Let's go say hi to him. And then I'm in the middle of setting up for Cheech and Chong or something. And then I got to go, oh, fuck, I'm going to sound like a dick when I say I can't take a picture with you. And that's come up with me. And if that even comes up at Comedy Castle where there's comics who want to introduce themselves to me because they think I'm going to get them on open mic, and maybe I will, but, you know, I'm also don't have time at that point. So it's a weird thing that I kind of get what Steve Harvey's saying, but at the same time, kind of like the Eliza thing, if people already think you're a dick and then this comes out, well, then you're just adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
You know, look, the knives are out already, and now we got now we see a spot to stab you. We see that the veins are exposed.
Exactly.
The arteries uncovered.
Now, speaking of a star that has been exposed real quickly here, in a worse show than Thunderdome that I have seen.
No.
It is maybe the worst television. You might have to watch this, Joel.
Ooh.
This could be one of... This is like Hall of Fame. This goes up there with Tournament of... What was the show we used to watch? Master of Champions.
Slice the banana.
Yes.
Oksana Bayul.
You are the best talent in our industry. We used to play Oksana Bayul clips from the beloved Master of Champions. Yeah. When you're talking about bad summer replacement television, there's a show called Beat Shazam.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
With Jamie Foxx.
Yes.
Now, I want to know.
I know.
What gambling debts Jamie Foxx has. Because
I saw Jamie Foxx in a gold Bugatti on TMZ. So I don't know. You tell me what debts he has.
What mob family? What is he in with the is it the cartels in Mexico? Is it the Russians? Which mob family has some leverage on Jamie Foxx to make him do Beat Shazam?
But
and what this show
old
is
to know that's just name that tune.
We are, but yeah, no, but old. It's new. Look, it's new to you.
It's for millennials.
There used to be a record store in Ferndale or a music shop that was like old vintage guy would rebuild guitars, and he was always cranky and didn't really want you to be in the store. He wanted to kind of just play with his guitars, and it was called New to You Guitars.
Yeah.
Well, this is New to You Television, where they just take an old format. You're right. It is totally name that tune.
Yeah.
But it's Beat Shazam, and it's like, it's so horrific. You really have to see it. It's really...
No, it sounds terrible, and I think, you know, I'm guessing people watch that because it's Jamie Foxx and not Chris Hardwick or some other... It's not Carson Daly or something. I don't know. I mean, is that the appeal of having Jamie Foxx there, is you get this sort of A-list movie guy to do a show that's clearly beneath him? Or you would think was beneath him, and then you do it, and obviously it's a commercial for Shazam at the same time.
Well, you know, apparently, I was just looking it up, apparently Beat Shazam's doing well in the ratings.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I figured it was doing good, but I mean, is it because of Jamie Foxx? Did you watch Beat?
I watched Beat Shazam.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I did. I watched at least 2/3 of an episode until I wanted to take a spoon and pull my eyes out of their sockets. And then I see that there's a show I have not watched and I'm not going to watch because life is too short.
Yeah.
And this is, I named him Asshole of the Year last time we did that. Number one Asshole of the Year. Ooh. I hate this man more than anybody. If I had him and Trump in a room and a hammer, I would have to think twice. Andy Cohen. Love Connection.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
I fucking hate. No, Andy Cohen is made the Real Housewives a thing. And that's his whole empire.
Well, he's,
and he deserves to burn in hell for
he's
that.
He's almost like the front man for Bravo at this point.
Yes.
All Bravo now flows through Andy Cohen. And if you're a housewife or some Bravo reality show.
This smug, self-satisfied douche that thinks he's wonderful and great. And he's making these like drunk, illiterate New Jersey housewives who slap each other into something that needs to be an industry that we all, you know what I mean? Like it's like the worst garbage on TV.
Yeah.
And now Anderson Cooper wants him to be the New Year's Eve host.
But his thing almost felt like, and maybe it started, I don't know what the derivation was. He was doing like the reunions of Real Housewives, like almost doing it's almost like doing Chris Hardwick doing Talking Dead after Walking Dead. Isn't that kind of what
he got famous doing? It's that's let's talk about things that have happened.
Jesus Christ.
Format. And he honestly, Andy Cohen started on a channel I liked, which was called Trio.
Oh, okay.
And Trio would show old pilots didn't sell, and they'd show old Lettermans, and it was all like, it was all recycled and repurposed old TV, but it was all stuff I thought was cool.
Yeah.
And they Trio would do a lot of behind the scenes, like, what was it like on the set of Charles in Charge? We're talking to Willie Ames.
Yeah.
And I think he got into that kind of aspect of celebutainment. But they created a monster. Anyway,
his background was fashion designer, though, or something?
Well, you know, maybe.
I don't know.
He's doing
Or he was a gossip columnist, or he was, I don't know what
he was. You know what,
why am I naming only jobs that homosexuals
do? I know.
Hey, now we're playing Pyramid.
Yeah, yeah. that was like the gay.
Hairdresser.
He just did the gay trifecta.
Ding,
he was like the
chef. Ding.
He was in the Dick Cathalon.
Ding.
He did all of the events.
Ding.
Interior
designer.
Hairstylist.
Ding.
Interior designer.
Ding. Real estate agent. Ding. 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 You know.
House flipper.
Yeah.
He did it all. The Dick Cathalon.
It's summer. There's no shortage of bad TV.
My God.
And there's no shortage.
That beat Shazam, though, will Thunderdome is terrible. Thunderdome at least has the mild interest of the products.
Yeah.
Oh my God, one guy got on there and he had this bad pitch. He was this New York guy that was like, dude, you ever have a problem with trying to get Kleenexes out of a box in your car? And he was like doing it, and it was literally, he made a caddy to like, with extra cup holders and like tissues in it.
Yeah.
For your armrest. It was just the dumbest thing. So there you go.
There we go. Well,
bad TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Joel Radio. We're going to get out of here. A couple quick plugs. I'm on the radio, 9:10 a.m. every Tuesday night. That's it. The Black Radio Station. Mike Bonner's
there
around midnight. I'm the co-host there every Tuesday night. You can get that at 9:10 a.m. superstation.com, I think is the thing. There's a webcam. You can watch me on that show. They give me my own camera.
Now, I'm doing Motown Mojo Live tonight.
Oh, are you? Yeah, I did that
show. Is there a webcam on that?
I think there might be, but they're not. You know what? You will have already done this by the time that goes up.
Well, we'll put a link to the archive.
Yeah, but I did that show a few weeks ago. You'll have a good time on that show. You're gonna be guesting with people that you don't know, probably musicians and stuff.
Sure.
But the guy's a comic book guy. He's a comic book artist, so I think you'll. I think you'll enjoy talking to him. He'll like it.
All right.
And then what else is going on? So, 9:10 a.m., catch me with Mike Bonner on there. And what else? I don't know. I'm off to L.A. in a little bit, so that'll be fun.
Well, all right. I'll get your L.A. review.
My L.A. review when I come back from that.
Sure.
And everything else, it's funny. You know, we talked about how we're doing the show off battery power. We're using a field recorder. The power company is outside my door.
And now it just started raining.
And they never cut the goddamn power. But
yeah.
So we did. I was even worried. I think your computer would power off your battery anyway if you lost power. But anyway, let's say goodnight. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Joel Radio. Eliza Schlesinger, Ted Moss, check out them up on joelradio.net.
Yeah.
You see that photo with those two together. It's a fun time.
They're the same species.
But thank you, Corey. Thank you, Ted.
Right.
Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next time on Joel Radio. Peace out. Good night. See you later, alligator. After a while, see Hardy.
Beat Shazam.
Your meat. Summer replacement, 8 weeks.